Good evening, and welcome to the Tuesday, February 20th, 2007 Carrboro Board of Aldermen meeting. We will begin with requests from visitors and speakers from the floor. Is there anyone here who would like to speak on a matter that is not on our printed agenda? Come on up.
Sitting in my chair.
I just wanted to bring everybody's attention. I live at 102 West Main Street, which is right above Bliss Meat Market. The crosswalk sirens that were reactivated today, they were deactivated about 2 or 3 weeks ago, came back up today. It basically makes that entire apartment building unlivable, the volume and pace that they come in. Not only that, they run all night with no breaks. Me and Laird Dixon is also a resident back there. We made a quick petition today we put one at the counter of Cliss Meat Market, one at Open Eye Cafe. In a matter of a couple hours, with nobody explaining the petition, we had over 50 signatures on it to get them deactivated, or as an alternate measure to have them button activated so they only signal when somebody actually needs to use the siren. I can't stress enough the inconvenience that it presents. It fills my house with noise and makes it impossible to concentrate on things there. On top of that, I know there were dozens of complaints earlier, which is why they were deactivated originally. The same from the business owners all the way down. You can hear it as far as Orange County Bar and all the way to the auto shop on the corner where Main turns.
You can hear it at the Arts Center.
Yeah. It's real serious. They reactivated them today. They said they were the lowest level. I talked to the guy as he was turning them in. The lowest level I don't notice an audible difference between the two. Besides that, even if the level were to come down on it, I don't think that it's going to be an acceptable. The noise pollution that it creates is so intense for the community. You can hear it Open Eye. You can probably hear it at Weaver Street, especially later. That I would like to, in the petition, which I can leave with you or take, and I'd be happy to get more signatures over the last bit. It's basically people requesting that they don't stop running between, after 10 at night and before 6 in the morning, but is that they're only activated when necessary. And that's our request.
If you wouldn't mind, you don't have to, but if you wouldn't mind stating your name for the record.
Oh, my name is David Laney.
All right. Thank you, David.
We have a report on that.
Let me suggest that you give a copy of the petition, the signatures you have so far, to the town clerk, who's to your immediate right there.
Okay.
So she can have a part of that the copy of that as a part of our record for tonight. Mr. Manager, can you comment on what the situation is?
I can. The board will recall that this board made a request last year for DOT to fund the installation of these audible signals to assist our visually impaired folks to be able to cross intersections in downtown Carrboro. It took a number of months for that to be processed through DOT, and then voila, all of a sudden one day they appeared. The board also knows that the town of Chapel Hill maintains our traffic signals and our pedestrian crossing equipment. So they are not trying to make them to be the bad guys, but they are the ones who are physically responsible for maintaining and installing the equipment. They install the equipment. We got a number of complaints. We talked to the Chapel Hill Engineering Department about the possibility of reducing the volume or temporarily deactivating until we could figure out what to do. It was our understanding that were not volume controls on the equipment. They were going to deactivate and look into some other options. Apparently, sometime today, the town of Chapel Hill, and I was actually in a meeting all day trying to be involved in another meeting and deal with this, but apparently sometime today, the Department of Transportation advised the town of Chapel Hill that they had no authority to deactivate those audible signals, and that they needed to be reactivated, and if they were not reactivated, that the town of Chapel Hill would be liable for anything that might occur as a result of the deactivation. So I was advised that the town of Chapel Hill would go ahead and reactivate. I personally talked with George Small this afternoon, who's the engineer for the town of Chapel Hill, who indicated that they would be, or they had ordered, a control device that would allow the volume to be controlled with a new control. Not sure when that's coming in, but as soon as it gets in, they would put that in and determine whether or not the level of sound would be acceptable. The option is for this board to request in writing to the Department of Transportation that those audible devices be removed, and then DOT would go through whatever process they have to make a determination about the removal of those devices. I just remind folks, it's for visually impaired folks. The idea of a button is, you know, not necessarily such a grand idea, because you're requiring a visually impaired person to find a button to push to activate the signal.
Still, it's inconceivable. I mean, I don't doubt in the slightest the points that you're making, Mr. Manager. But having traveled to many metropolitan areas across North Carolina, I've never seen never heard a signal that's as loud as that one. So unless the standard has changed for the volume on the audio signals, it's hard to imagine how, you know, there must be another alternative, is all I can say. But
well, I can only tell you what I've been told. I don't pretend to be an expert in that area, and I've been told the existing control device, it is one volume, and that's it. And they've ordered a device that would control the volume and allow it to go up or down, but that's not apparently a capability of the existing device.
Can we inquire of DOT of what might otherwise be available other than this particular installation? I mean, if there are other installations that aren't as loud, or there are different, I mean, you know, I don't, I mean, if they're, I guess I want to say, you know, it's just not one, for want of a better analogy, light bulb type, you can only get 75. Are there other audible installations that could both assist the visually impaired and also not be noise pollution to the neighborhood? And I guess, because if there are other whatever installations that are different from that one, that's compatible with the system, then maybe that's what we should ask for specifically.
We can ask, and let me just add that the staff person who was directly involved in this was Dale McKeel,
right,
our transportation planner, who is no longer here. And so the staff person who had all the contacts on this project is not available.
I live a block away down Maple, and I can hear it in my house. So if it's that way in my house, I can't imagine what it's like where you live. I think I might disagree with you about having a button for visually impaired people, because visually impaired people use Braille buttons in elevators, and they know how to, and you learn how to do that. So I think it might be possible, and they probably exist, to have a button for a Braille button. And I don't understand why that intersection. I mean, we have many intersections, and it's not that I'm asking for it at every intersection. unless we can come up, if we could come up with something that was that was activated by a Braille button, then I think we should have it at every intersection. This just seems that DOT is handling this in a really cavalier ineffective way. And if we have to petition DOT, I don't want this board to be in a position of saying, okay, we're not going to have this assistance for visually impaired people. I mean, that's not us. That's not Carborough. They have to have something that's more sensible than this. I don't want us to ask DOT to totally deactivate it. And then I hear, you know, they've ordered this device. Do you have any idea how long the device would take?
I'm sorry, but I've told you everything.
I know. And then there has to be a work order for it. So, I mean, the idea of people having to put up with this for another couple days, much less a week or more, is not a happy thought.
Do they do FedEx?
Yeah. UPS or whatever.
Yeah, I must say, too, my what scares me is the idea of turning the volume, reducing the volume, because where my window is less than 50 feet from the speaker, so when it turns down to a volume where you can only hear it a block away instead of three blocks away, it's still going to be
quite loud.
It was on for 3 days before, and there was no sleep in the building. It was impossible to sleep in there. It's like a clown squeezing a horn by your head. And I know, I definitely don't want to request taking something away from visually impaired people that helps them as a tool.
Yeah.
But I'm also very aware, having also been to many cities before, that visually impaired people can read Braille and they know where buttons are, and there are a lot of crosswalk buttons that have Braille on them, specifically for this purpose, which is a way I think that could satisfy everybody, you know, affected by this.
Could you happen to remember any city where you've seen that?
Chicago, I live there, yes.
So maybe we could contact Chicago and ask them where they
put
got
them
their...
Put them in touch with NCDOT.
Where they got the real buttons.
I'm sure there are many metal shops here that could make them, too. I'd be happy to supply some friends.
Well, Mr. Manager, if you could... I know... the manager has been involved in personnel interviews for the last 2 days straight, an important personnel matter, which I think all of us appreciate. But if you could, those are done, is that right? So if you could tomorrow try to determine what the pace of the solution is and whether there's anything that we can do, that our town staff can do, to speed up the pace of resolving this situation.
Man, I don't know if Roy or Trish have any, or George have any additional information, because we've not talked today.
Well, I could add a couple of things. Okay. About a couple of questions that were asked.
Hello again. We do have a request in, and I think that actually there have been signals approved at three intersections in downtown. This one, the intersection at Armadillo Grill, and the one at Rosemary and Main down by Performance. So there are two others. I don't have a schedule yet for when those signals may go in. This one's a...
not until they get the volume.
Not until this one's corrected, I think, is the answer to that question, or a question. And we met at the site yesterday, actually several staff members from Carborough and Chapel Hill to look at the situation, try and identify some possible solutions, alternatives that we could then explore with DOT. And in the process of exploring some of those ideas, DOT became aware of the fact that the signal was no longer on, and this raised the concern with them about the liability and so forth. So, it was a timing issue in that regard. We knew we had to have approval from them to make any changes to it, since it was approved by them to install it. So, so our apologies for the uncomfortable situation we're in. We had hoped to turn it on with a better solution than the one that's facing us.
And we certainly blame you.
Definitely. It was an unintended consequence of the situation. And so that is the course of events, though. And we have talked with DOT. There actually are a number of applications throughout the state that they're looking at, and trying to determine, whether the devices are different in a number of cities, the actual electronics and so forth, and so, finding the solution that works here isn't, you know, completely straightforward. They're looking for applications that use the same equipment we use to give us suggestions on how to make changes, as well as the information that that Steve shared with you. So,
well, let me just suggest that this might be one of those situations where our state legislative delegation might be able to be very persuasive about the pace of response that would be appropriate from the State Department of Transportation. So we'd be glad to get in touch with them if that would.
Well, I mean, I think that all efforts are probably worthwhile in light of this. And we've had certainly the response, you know, Chapel Hill's response initially was because they were seeing that this was a problem, you know, and that certainly wasn't the intention. And, you know, there is the need to acquire whatever the thing is, get it to Chapel Hill, get it installed, and that's the, you know, we're hoping to expedite that as much as we can.
Could we, through fax tomorrow, send a letter from this board requesting that the device be turned off until the volume control? Because actually, I think it's so loud that it would be hard to tell what direction it's coming from if you were standing at the corner. I can't see where it would even be that effective. So could we get this board to send a letter, fax it over to DOT, and ask that we be able to turn it off tomorrow until this device arrives? Because otherwise, people are going to be hearing this for a week.
Well, the only condition that is the one that Steve noted, and that is that the town accepts liability for the fact that the signal, which was installed, is no longer in operation at the intersection. So
I think we do apologize, you know, for the inconvenience, but so safety comes first. And I lived in Washington, D.C. for a while, and you kind of get used to the fire alarms and the ambulances hitting your house every 5 seconds. There are earplugs. They work beautifully.
Have you heard this, Joe?
Excuse me? Yeah, I have heard it.
I can completely disagree with what I lived with a train going through my backyard for 6 years in Chicago.
Okay. The earplugs temporarily while we fix it, you know?
Well, let's, before somebody, let's do this. With the support, presumably, of the entire board, the mayor's office will get in touch with our state legislative delegation to urge them to urge the Department of Transportation to act quickly on this matter and get the situation resolved, both short-term and long-term. I have to say that I can remember a time at least like 15 years ago when the audio signal was installed on Franklin Street in Chapel Hill. It's the exact same, we're talking about the exact same crosswalk signal system, because Chapel Hill mm-hmm. runs our crosswalk mm-hmm. signal system here in Carrboro. And let me just say, the technology works considerably differently there. There's got to be a way to resolve the situation. So we have a lengthy agenda before us tonight. We're going to continue on with our agenda. Thank you for coming tonight, gentlemen. And you got a copy of the petition. Thank you. And we look forward to addressing this very quickly. All right. Are there other matters that are not on the printed agenda that anybody came to speak about tonight? If not, Mr. Manager, the consent agenda.
Item 1 is approval of minutes of the previous meetings, and item 2 is a request to amend the miscellaneous fees and charges schedule.
Move the item.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passed unanimously. Mr. Manager, item D1.
Okay. Item D1 is a New Horizons Task Force update. Purpose of this item is for the Mayor and Board of Aldermen to receive an update from the New Horizons Task Force, and I believe Lydia Lavelle is coming to make the presentation.
Good evening. I'm Lydia Lavelle, Chair of the New Horizons Task Force,
and with me is Laura Wenzel. She's our secretary. And we are here to give a second report from this task force that was formed last May 2006. And we are a task force that will be in force until June. So this is the second of what will be three presentations to the board. Our last presentation was on September 19th. And so what I'd like to do is tell you a little bit about what we've gone over since our last presentation to the board and give you some specific comments about some areas that we discussed over the last several months. Our task force, again, meets once a month, and several task force members and Alderman Haven O'Donnell and Coleman are there every month with us. And over the last several months, we've discussed the items listed here on this slide. We've discussed the Greenway Summit. We went over SAPFO. We discussed the proposed development moratorium. We solicited comments from residents in the neighborhoods and gathered those together and submitted those to you several months ago. One item we did was we discussed at length the annexation process, and we also asked for and received feedback from several residents and compiled those, and I'll be going over those with you shortly. We made our appointment to the Rogers Road Committee. Laura Wenzel is our appointee. A few months ago, we discussed elementary school number 10 as it was making its way through the approval process as it is. And another item was that we asked for the folks in the new annex area to give us suggestions on how to ease the tax burden. So we have some kind of generic and specific comments that we receive from them, and in our task as communicators, we're going to communicate those items to you. And last week's meeting, we discussed the transfer station. And so I'm going to talk a little bit about the annexation recommendations, and then Laura will talk about the taxes and the transfer station. So as far as recommendations regarding annexation, and the reason we spent some time on this is because, as you might expect, it was probably the number one subject of all the surveys we received from everyone. And we thought it would be constructive to talk out perceived problems with the process, and to the extent that the board might be able to change some of the ways that things were done, we thought that we would give you some constructive feedback that we discussed. We talked about it for two meetings, and we came up with several suggestions that we'd like to present to you tonight. So this is just kind of an overall feeling that our task force had. And the thought here is that the Board of Aldermen could perhaps exceed what is required by statute in terms of neighborhood input. There are some certain minimums that are given by statute, and so it was suggested through our discussion that perhaps the board could go above and beyond what is required, what the bare minimum is that required by statute. So, and I believe you may have heard some of this before, we may have discussed it, but for instance, our group, we feel like we're getting a lot done, we're discussing a lot of important issues, but in the future we think it might be best to have a neighborhood transition group formed prior to annexation. Now, I know that pursuant to statute, there's a formal resolution of intent that the board had in a formal public information hearing that's required. And beyond those, we heard comments that to the extent that there's a more transparent kind of talking with the neighborhoods to the extent possible of perhaps upcoming annexations. According to statute, you're supposed to publish or post signs and notices in affected areas and suggest that perhaps both could be done. You know, put out notice, say this is where it is, kind of let folks know that it's coming so that questions can be asked and hard questions can be asked and answered and so forth. As was done under the statute and perhaps even a little bit beyond. Now, these comments kind of go to what was given, I think, at the public information meeting and in various handouts and so on. And these are kind of specific examples. For instance, the taxes that were being raised were given on examples of houses that were $100,000. So it suggested that perhaps provide more realistic numbers at those meetings, you know, for example, base the examples given on an average home value so that, you know, one could really see how what the impact was going to be tax-wise. Perhaps that those meetings include all of the fees, you know, not just the obvious ones, property tax and you know, some reduction in homeowners insurance and so on, but all the little extra fees, you know, right down to buying the trash bins and paying for your cat and just, you know, kind of have it a little more inclusive because as they would come up, I think it would anger people a little more. And then use the meeting, you know, to provide the hard information. You know, this is the reality. Don't try to sell it. Just be frank about this is the way it's going to be and this is how it's going to affect you. Other comments, have the timing of the annexations so that they take effect July 1st. You know, a lot of communities do that. It just seems to be, you know, kind of in keeping with fiscal year, in keeping with tax bills, just kind of the you know, when they're coming around, and also coming with, you know, a few months before the election so that there's not anger at having being annexed right after an election takes place. This slide is kind of it's another way to kind of put people on notice to the extent that you can of areas that might be annexed, and perhaps on a yearly basis at a yearly time an update is given. Someone assesses the joint, you know, someone in staff or the appropriate person assesses the joint planning agreement and kind of looks and says these are areas that could be considered for annexation either this year or the next 2 or 3 years, not being held to it, just kind of putting people on general notice. If folks come into the area, move into the area, often they call town staff and they say, you know, what's the status? You know, then town staff, someone, some point person could be a person who says, you know, this is not in stone, but this is kind of where we stand and these are areas that could be annexed in the future. This illustrates that the sentiment that do not annex until services are actually in place or scheduled to be in place. For example, situation right now, the fire station is going to be built and the roads are going to be transferred from the state to town, but you know, try to do it a little closer to the time when those services are fully in place. And then, you know, a final suggestion. And this is a suggestion. You know, we're relaying all suggestions we got on the surveys. Kind of, this is obviously a radical thought, but it was prevalent through the surveys that Carrboro, you know, consider doing away with involuntary annexation. You know, noting that 47 other states do not allow involuntary annexation, and just as a matter of interest, you know, this is obviously it's a hot topic in North Carolina right now. They're 7 bills in the House, in the General Assembly, addressing involuntary annexation for all different ways, like a moratorium on annexation, not allowing annexation in areas that already receive services, and other kind of reasons. But it's something that's not unique to Carrboro. Okay, now I'm going to turn it over to Laura, and she can go on with the rest of the presentation.
Okay, taxation was the number one issue outside of the process. And these slides, I'm going to put them in context. We added them before we had a chance to do adequate research. And so we did research after we had to submit the presentation. So I just want to give you that context. So some of the surveys had suggestions that the there'd be a town merger between Chapel Hill and Carrboro to reduce the amount of revenue needed to run the town. This was explored about 20 years ago by the UNC Institute of Government, and at that time it was viewed that it was not necessarily a good idea, that there wasn't overwhelming sentiment for it. So it may be time to revisit maybe not so much a town merger, but merging some select departments. there is one of the arguments against merger is that it would allow Carborough to remain a separate entity and give it an opportunity to develop a progressive tax structure and in that way stand out in this area. So that's basically that for that slide. So just a suggestion of, you know, revisiting a look at what kind of services could be merged and what different kind of tax structure could be put in place. other suggestions were improving or increasing commercial development in the area. And again, this was put in before research was done. We found that there is actually very good cooperation between the four governments in the area regarding economic development. The economic development people in each government meet once a month, and they have created four different work groups, one of which is to improve the business climate countywide. And a big box store is something that also was suggested on the surveys. The residents in the annexed areas don't seem to mind. I mean, it's the feel that a big box store could fit in with Carborough. A big box store brings in four times more revenue than the next largest store, which is a grocery store. So a big box store would be like the equivalent of four Harris Teeters in bringing revenue to the town. We feel that along Highway 54 is probably the only potential viable location for such a store. This concludes our investigation into the tax issue. Now, comments regarding the transfer station. There is a lot of negative sentiment for the transfer station. We were not aware as a board of or as a task force about the sentiment at our last meeting. But then I went to the Rogers Road meeting last week and learned that there's a petition that's been passed around the neighborhoods, although for some reason none of us on the task force got it. But there's about 200 signatures on that petition, or there were as of last Thursday. We do believe that the rush to make a decision on the transfer station, which is coming from the county, we realize that, not from Carborough, still feels somewhat the same as the rush to, what was perceived as the rush to annex. It might behoove or would behoove the Board of Aldermen to maybe try to put some brakes on this process. To create a process, because there's feeling that the process was not followed. From what I learned at the Rogers Road meeting was that the solid waste director was either not directed to investigate other sites or was directed to investigate only one other site. And so this would be a chance for the Board of Aldermen to work with the Board of Commissioners to understand and address the concerns of the residents in neighboring the transfer station regarding this, and to slow the whole process down and gather and provide accurate information about what a transfer station is, how it will impact the neighborhoods, and to solicit feedback from the residents and implement the recommendations that the residents are suggesting, within reason, obviously. Do you want to do the summary? So in the next few months, the task force will be examining further the transfer station issue and some of the topics remaining from the survey. One idea is going to be coming from the Alderman Haven O'Donnell that we discussed on our last meeting, and it was a recommendation that we liked, and I'm not going to steal your fire, so I'll let you talk about it. We would encourage the Board of Aldermen to let us know about any additional items that we should examine, because at the time that we did the survey, the transfer station wasn't on anybody's radar screen, so it wasn't included in the survey. So we would like to know if there's any other issues that are going to be coming up that we should solicit feedback from our neighbors on. And we will be making our final report to you in June.
Jack?
Thank you, and thank you for all the work and your continued work in this. If this board decides tonight to set a public hearing for a moratorium
on development or
on development, it might be a good idea to get some feedback from your group on that at the public hearing, which would be, if we decide to set it, which would be March 27th.
Okay. We'll definitely do that.
Any other comments from members of the board?
I just want to say the New Horizon Task Force folks have worked really hard, and they've done a great job, so I just wanted to appreciate them.
Dan?
Yeah, I was very impressed with the discussion that took place at the meeting where we talked about the annexation issue, and particularly because that annexation process had really been so difficult and there was so much emotion attached to it for the members of the task force, and to come up out of that with some very constructive suggestions that I think a number of them are very good suggestions. And so I would like us to put that on, just take that list of suggestions on annexation and put that on an agenda to talk about, and if there's a way we can inform future boards that might have an annexation possibility come up on to learn from what our experience to do a better job on that.
So. Any other comments? The only thing, go ahead.
Briefly, I mean, as you folks know, annexation is a state law, and so any changes on annexation has to be addressed by the state legislature. So that's where the statute needs to be changed.
Yeah, I think that we're not suggesting changing the state laws. It's more looking into how Carrboro as an entity can work with those state laws to improve its relationships with potential future residents.
But I think if I read, maybe I misread, I thought you folks want to do away with involuntary annexation, and that's special. That's a state law.
We're quoting from comments that folks gave us, and a quote was, do away with involuntary annexation. So if it needs to be policy-wise by the alderman, then so be it.
Yeah, the idea is we can choose not to have an involuntary annexation, regardless of the law.
What's less done is Chapel Hill. So.
My only request would be that you provide feedback with the Rogers Road Task Force, that small area plan.
Okay, so you would like us to come back with a report on what the Rogers Road...
Right, and feedback from the neighbors about how they feel about the plan as well.
Okay.
Yep. Excellent.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you all.
I move to accept the report.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to accept the report. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed. The matter passed unanimously. Mr. Manager, item D2.
Okay. Item D2 is a proposal for retiree health insurance coverage for fiscal year July 1, 2007, June 30, 2008. The purpose of this item is to present a staff proposal for retiree health insurance benefits coverage. We have Todd Yates, who is with our insurance brokerage firm of Hill, Chestnut, and Woody to provide a presentation for the board, and I would note that we're simply asking tonight that the board receive the report and ask any questions that you all have. We would plan to follow up this meeting with employee meetings to get more information out to our employees, but this is to give you all a chance to take a look at an issue that we've been talking with you about in general terms for the last couple of years. And I would ask on Todd's behalf if you could hold your questions till the end, perhaps Todd's information that he covers in his PowerPoint might answer your questions. Todd?
Super. As well as we have handouts for this that go through all the slides that we're going to distribute, I think, at the end of the presentation. So any of the notes that you see on the slides will be documented for you. Just for the record, my name is Todd Yates, representative with Hill, Chestnut, and Woody. Appreciate the opportunity to be here with you guys tonight. We're here to really talk about a challenging subject for organizations all across our country. Thank you. Organizations all across our country are faced with the rising cost of health care. And just to put a little background perspective. I've provided some information here. This data is representative of data that's collected by the Kaiser Foundation. The blue line that you see represented here goes through and it shows the rising increase of health care costs, health insurance premiums, actually, throughout our country. It goes from 1988 through 2006, and you'll see the compounded adjustment there over that time frame is a 403% increase, 403.8% increase to be exact. And you look at that, and then you look at the lines that are represented with the red and green there represent overall inflation and the increase in workers' earnings. And you can start to see the disparity there, start to see a visual of the, frankly, the crisis that organizations are facing and trying to maintain a benefit plan that's inclusive enough to help them recruit and retain the folks they need to accomplish the goals of their organization. Definitely a hyperinflation situation. So how does this apply to the item that we're discussing tonight or sharing with you guys tonight? It's really a two-pronged piece. One is the rising cost of the health plan for our base plan that we provide to all of our active employees, as well as the future cost of the liability that the town's accumulating towards covering the cost of our retiree medical program. So to try to give a little background information with this, I thought it might be helpful just to go through and give you a really high level of the overall components of a healthcare premium dollar. So we're all working from a general platform of understanding. Of course, you can drill these components down to, you know, specific minutiae, but when you really roll them up, there's really three components to the cost of a healthcare premium dollar. The first component is administrative expenses, and that goes through to cover all the items you'd normally associate with that, including the customer service, the contracts, booklets, ID cards, that type of thing. For a group the size of the town of Carrboro, the marketplace will generally bear about a 19% of the premium dollar going towards that component. The other piece is referred to here as stop loss, or you may hear that as referred to as a pooling charge, pooling level. That's really the insurance protection portion of the equation that any organization is buying when they're buying a healthcare program. And our pooling level is running about 5 cents of every premium dollar that we pay in. The last component of that is obviously the claims, and that's any amount that United Healthcare is paying back out on behalf of the town to doctors, hospitals, pharmacists, labs, anyone that's providing medical services to the members that are covered under our program. And the target for that is 76 cents of every premium dollar that we pay in. The quandary that we find ourselves in is when you go through and you start to look at our history with that, and it's really not just a history over this past year. It's really about a three-year history now, at least as much as the data that we can get to support it. Prior to that, we had very scant data due to the size of the group at the time, as well as the information the carrier we had at that time provided. But when you go through and you look at that prior slide, you can obviously see that once you cut through the admin and the risk charge, it's really all about the claims. And as your claims go, so go your future health care premiums. And the challenge for us is for our underwriting cycle, which ended through the 31st of December for 2006, for every dollar that we had paid in premium to United Healthcare, it actually paid out a dollar and a penny in claims, with our target being at 76 cents. It's going to put us in a position where we're going to experience another significant renewal from United Healthcare. You don't see this on the slide, but if you go back and you look at our previous underwriting period with United Healthcare, we're actually running at about 112%. That was on a short period of time, and obviously we got a significant increase with that. So how does this play into the retiree scenario? Well, again, two ways, both from the current liability as well as a future liability. And the slide that you see here goes through and it represents our first plan year with United Healthcare. It goes through and it shows the percentage that our active employees make up versus of our membership versus the retirees. And then you go through and you also see the percentage of incurred claims. And you go and you look and 91% of our membership were active employees and they accumulate or active employees or dependents of active employees, and they accumulated 71% of our claims, versus our retiree population represented 8.3% of our membership and accumulated 29% of our claims. So you can start to see the disparity there and the challenge that this adds both to our current cost as well as the future cost of our retiree medical program. The second piece to this is obviously around the future liability of it. And as many of you guys are, I'm sure, aware, there's a new requirement that all municipal groups, state, local, national, start reporting the future liability of the cost. And so the town of Carrboro complied with that. We went out and we had a calculation done by the actuarial group. And there's all kinds of articles in the media about the various numbers that municipal groups are reporting. They're all over the board, and there's some concern right now. Is, you know, this is a new phenomenon that's being measured. You know, has everybody got the right measurement down? And so, you know, there's some variance there. But either way you look at it, the amount of liability that's there is substantial. And we don't have to report it at this time, but we are going to have to start reporting it as a 2009-2010 financial cycle. If you go through and you look at all the guidance that's out there from Standards and Poor's and the bond rating agencies, it's really mixed right now. They're not coming out and giving clear direction on it. They are suggesting that that organizations handle this in a prudent, proactive fashion. And what we're proposing to you guys tonight is exactly in line with that, to try to be as proactive around this as we can so we can get a grasp on it before it becomes a more significant challenge that would be more difficult to tackle down the road. The main thing, when we spoke with bond rating agencies, they said, you know, they were really not sure exactly how this was going to impact the ability to borrow money in the future. They're working through this piece, and I'm sure they'll come to consensus, but when you start to look at the magnitude of the numbers that are out there, it's got to have some type of impact, I would think. What you see here is actually a matrix that goes through what we're recommending for the council to receive tonight or consider tonight. And as I was working with the town manager on this piece, we went through and we looked at a whole continuum of options. And we looked at, you know, from, you know, the most aggressive to where we just went out and completely ended the retiree medical program. And then we looked at the other end of the spectrum of not doing anything. And we tried to go through and see and balance all the pieces here, not the least of which was the human piece of this, to come up with a plan that we felt would put us in a spot to sustain our program the best we could in the future and still put it in a position where we started doing the right and the prudent thing to try to manage it from a physical responsibility. So if you go through this matrix, you'll see here that the changes that we're actually recommending are fairly insignificant. If you go through it, we've got it broken up by different categories of employees or retirees. Active employees, obviously, they're currently on our group medical plan, and we're proposing they would stay there. Our non-Medicare eligible retirees that were hired prior to July 1st, 2007, they're currently on our group medical plan, and we were proposing they continue to remain on our group medical plan. Until people reach Medicare eligible time frames, it's difficult for people to go out into the marketplace and purchase individual policies. So we're proposing to leave that as it is currently. For Medicare eligible retirees that are hired prior to July 1st, 2007, so that's anybody that's currently retired person from the town that's Medicare eligible due to their age, we're proposing to move them off of our group health plan and to move them onto a group Medicare supplement plan. And we're going to share with you the details of that in just a moment, how that plan looks. The coverage is very comparable. We tried to build the plan to be of equivalent actuarial value to what our current group health plan was. So we're proposing to do that. And then probably the most significant piece of this is for future people that are hired to work for the town. Their retiree benefit would move away from a more of a defined benefit or being on our plan and move towards a more of a defined contribution. Excuse me. Would it take the form of a stipend? We'll show you how we would propose that works here in a second. We definitely believe that this recommendations in perspective with the marketplace is seeing. We go through, we pulled a couple of quotes from Standard & Poor's as well as the USA Today, and we're providing the full articles for where these quotes were removed for your packet of information we're going to share at the end. This goes through and it shows you what the financial significance of this would be. This was as of our last renewal with United Healthcare, July 1st, 2006. And if you look over to the right, you see the items are highlighted in green. It goes through and it shows we had a 27.9% increase. Obviously, we're running a significant loss ratio to incur that type of increase. Perspective to see, you know, how significant United Healthcare felt that our retirees were contributing to this portion. We went and we had some pricing done to see what it would be if we excluded them. And the second green number you see there, the 9.4%, goes through and it's representative. If we had just removed all retirees, retirees that were both Medicare eligible as well as those that were not, and obviously it's a significant amount of money, but that would be more towards the aggressive end of the continuum as far as managing this program. It was outside of the parameters that we felt were warranted to recommend. We also went and we got a number from United Healthcare on what it would be if we removed just the post 65 retirees. And that number comes in at 23.7%. And then you see the number, it's supposed to be pink, if you can see it down the corner there, it's 26.2% would be the cost if we had removed those folks from the plan and then went back and added in the group Medicare supplement program that we're proposing. So when you go through and you compare the 26.2 to the 27.9, you'll see there's not a drastic savings in our immediate health care costs. This is a small, very, very small proactive step to move things in a positive direction and make sure that to put ourselves in the best position to try to maintain the cost in the future. And I think the difference in those numbers there go through and probably add as much credibility as anything that the recommendation we've got here is not a drastic move. If it was, it would certainly be a more disparate number in the savings there. The piece that I had shared with you a moment ago around the stipend, that's what you see recognized here. If you recall, the first slide that I shared with you goes through and it shows obviously that our health care costs are in a hyperinflation mode. And what we're proposing is for anyone that's hired after July the 1st, 2007, that we remove our health care benefit or retiree health care benefit out of that hyperinflation mode and tie it to a consumer price index. And just to give you an example, we went through and we looked at the current single rate for employees at $368. If you go through and you look at that over a 10-year period of time and you continue to compound at the hyperinflation rate of 12%, and I would tell you that's a pretty conservative number if you look at what healthcare trends have been, it put us at a cost of $13,721 in 10 years versus the $5,937 if we pulled it out of that hyperinflation mode and tied it to a CPI index. This just goes through and it compares our current plan to the proposed Medicare supplement plan. I'm not going to go through every detail on this, but what we've tried to do is go through all the items that people are utilizing on a frequent basis and then compare that to the program that we're proposing. When you go through and you look at it, the number one goal that we had when we were trying to select this program was to find one that was of equivalent value for any individual that was using it. And I think when you go through and you look at that, you'll find that we have found a program that's of equivalent value, actually maybe of slightly greater value. The carrier that you see up there above the top right-hand corner, this references NEBCO. I'm sure no one's probably familiar with NEBCO. They're an administrator only. They specialize in this type type of health plan. They distribute this program throughout the country. The actual insurer behind this is Hartford. So this is not a, some unknown organization. NEBCO is the administrator, but Hartford is a household brand that has excellent financial ratings and would not put us in any kind of jeopardy with the liability that they would be taking on for our retirees.
Can I ask a quick question? The $131 deductible there, is that a separate deductible for each line item, or is it one deductible for the whole plan?
That's a terrific question. The deductible, that is actually one annual deductible. So it applies to all those various places, but once that person had met $131 deductible, the deductible would be met for all of those items for that plan year.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. Of course, you go through and you look at the plan design, and as you guys have a chance to study that greater, I believe that you'll perceive that it's of equal value, if not a better value. The other piece is then, obviously, what would the cost be for the people that were going to experience this? And you see here in the center column, it goes through and it shows our current cost. And this is the cost from the retiree's perspective. As you guys are familiar, you see the contribution strategy in the left-hand column here based on years of service the person has. And obviously, the town subsidizes that at a different rate depending on the years of service. The proposed plan is age-banded. It's also differentiates between male and female. And we've published the numbers there that were effective for January the 1st, 2007. That's also one of the differences here. Obviously, we're going to have a renewal with United Healthcare for July 2007. These numbers with the proposed plan would not increase until 2008, so you've got a six-month disparity there in the timing of this. Anytime you consider a program like this, obviously, you want to try to balance the physical responsibility with the human side of this equation. You also want to make sure that you've looked at all the compliance issues. We vetted through those issues and outlined them to the best of our knowledge and capability. We shared those with the town attorney. Town attorneys looked at those, and statement was had not identified any specific concerns. Obviously, this is an evolving situation in our society, and the laws are changing on a frequent basis. So we need to continue to monitor this. But right now, we don't see any compliance concerns that would preclude us from moving forward with this recommendation. Mm. This is the second part of keep going with this. Okay. The other thing that we've been asked to address was the recommendation of considering part-time employees to be added to the employee benefit program. Part-time employees, there's a quote that you see here. United Healthcare is obviously the underwriter of our plan. Had some dialogue with them. This is actually a direct quote from United Healthcare's actuarial group. Underwriters don't like part-time employees on the medical plan, or rather, we consider them high risk. And these are some of the items that they mentioned for this. It's really all about adverse selection. They mentioned, we listed three things specifically here. The first one was time. People who are working on a part-time basis actually have more time to go out and access services. The other thing is that if they haven't had coverage before, they generally will have an opportunity to have pent-up demand for services. Obviously, the slide we talked about in the beginning goes through and says the more claims we have, the higher our health care premiums are going to, or the more rapid our health care premiums are going to escalate in the future. The other significant component to this that United's underwriters perceive as adverse selection is around the wages and contribution. Even if the town elected to contribute the same amount towards the health care coverage for part-time employees, if you go and you look at that as a percentage of their actual income, it's a much greater percentage, and so the likelihood that people are going to waive out of that program unless they're absolutely, have some major medical condition where they would really need the services to a significant degree, the likelihood for them to waive out of that program is much more significant. It creates an adverse selection opportunity. And then the other piece, maybe the most significant piece, is that it's just not the marketplace norm to offer a full-blown medical plan to part-time employees. And the challenge you run with that is if you're doing something that's outside of the norm, if someone has a major medical condition, it may lead them to seek employment with the town simply to get the coverage on a part-time basis when they couldn't receive it anywhere else. So, town manager asked us to explore this. We went and had this conversation with United Healthcare, and these were the findings that we pulled from that. Overall summary is that we're trying to consider or trying to keep our liability from escalating when the cost is rising rapidly, and I believe this would certainly be something to not aid in that picture. It would actually expand the risk that we're currently assuming. That's the end of our prepared remarks.
Yeah. Alderman Brown.
And you showed us the slide that the 19 cents of every dollar was administrative cost. I'm curious, with regards to the increase that you showed us with the wages and CPI and the cost of health insurance, what percentage of that increase from, 2,000, which was about 150% to 430%, is administrative? What part of it is real health costs? What part of it is cost of drugs? Do you have that kind of information?
If I heard you correctly, I believe you're asking what are the items that make up healthcare trend.
Right.
That's a terrific question. It's one that could take a long time to answer. Frankly, there's not much good data out there with the exception of one study that Price Waterhouse has conducted. And they go through and they actually break down the components of healthcare trend. By the way, mentioned this when the first slide was up from the Kaiser, that's actually not reflective, and if you look at the footnotes, it's not reflective of healthcare trend. It's actually reflective of the healthcare increases. Healthcare trends actually run at a much higher, I shouldn't say a much higher, but a slightly higher rate than that. That's actually reflective of the increases that employers have purchased over the years. So that's after they've reduced their benefits as part of the process. I would tell you any number of components that are driving health care trend, obviously aging demographics of our society, increased sedentary lifestyle that our society is living. If you go through and you look at the reports, evidence of diabetes and cholesterol and hypertension are raising at alarming rates. Also, just the advance of medical technology. That's a significant piece of that. Organizations continue to develop amazing technology, which in a moment of need we're all thankful for, but as they develop that, it certainly raises the cost of providing care. So I'd be glad to provide that report if you were interested in that. Again, it's through Price Waterhouse, and it goes through and breaks down all the specific components.
I'd like a copy.
Sure.
I got some more questions.
Oh, okay.
Let's see. Maybe that'll hold me till time for comment.
Dan and then Jackie.
Yeah, I just wanted to go back to your last slide about the part-time employees. Do I understand correctly that you didn't actually run any numbers on how that coverage would affect our costs?
At this time we have not run any numbers on it. The request, as I understood it, was to ask United Healthcare's perspective of the risk on it, and they are underwriting a risk, so that's where we went. If that's okay. Of interest, then we could certainly do that.
The one thing you left out of the list of the reasons why healthcare is going up is greed. You know, as long as we have a healthcare system that's based on profit rather than health, and the concerns of the stockholder are greater than the concerns of the patient, this is what we're going to see. I think before us tonight we have a document that makes a really strong argument for health care reform. I think we'd all agree to that. I'd like to ask that this board at a later time consider taking pieces of this document and showing the great pressure that the lack of health care reform is putting on municipalities, particularly small municipalities, and send that on to both our state and our federal legislative delegations so that hopefully they can use it in making an argument for health care reform, because not only is this a great burden to us as a small town, but way beyond that, the idea that we will at some point be hiring people and giving them a stipend and sending them out on the market, that, you know, again, when money is more important than people, and I guess that's the era we're living in, but I'd like for the board to maybe in another meeting or two come up with a letter to send to our legislative delegations, just presenting this as proof for the need for health care reform.
We're going to be meeting with our state legislative delegation next Monday.
I won't be here, so will one of you please?
Well, the rest of us are going to be meeting.
Yeah.
Some of the rest of us are going to be meeting with them. And
can I take that point?
Yes,
I just want to take that in another direction, which is because I was thinking along the same lines of Jackie, but that it was timely, this coming up right after the New Horizons presentation and the focus there on carbon taxes. And I think anyone concerned about that who stayed tuned in for this presentation should understand how critical this issue is to the cost of town government, and people who want to make a difference in local tax rates ought to join organizations and support organizations and lobby for organizations that are looking for reform at the federal and state level, because that's where this problem has to be solved. And one other point in that regard is that it may take some time for that to be solved. You know, John Edwards may not be able to solve it in February of 2009, even though he's got the plan. And I don't want to see our retired employees being the ones suffering for that, even though, you know, that creates a burden on the citizens of Carver. I think we also have a obligation to those employees who've served the town so well. And I think when we talk about this proposal to move to a stipend and the implications of that, that we'll be very thoughtful about how much that stipend is going to be and what coverage might actually cost as we look down the road.
All right. Welcome to the People's Republic.
Yeah, exactly.
Mark, can we just look back at, I'd like to see the Medicare supplement slide, the one that showed the, now it's.
We have some handouts if you'll have it in front of you as well, as I'll pull it back up on the projector.
Well, yeah, I am.
If I can get.
Yeah.
This slide right here?
That's the one. I might just ask this NEBCO plan. Where is this in process now? Can you name a place that a municipality that might have this in operation now?
I can get you a list of references if you'd like. It's not an obscure organization. I mean, they have a significant market share throughout, and to try to list the references off the top of my head for them right this moment, I couldn't do that, but I'd be glad to provide a list of them if you'd like.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to add to that, if you look at the very first line there, providers accepting Medicare assignment, that's a huge given, because there are an awful lot of providers that do not accept Medicare, and I would hate to have, you know, at the time when people need health care the most after they get older and they're retiring, for them not to be able to see the doctors that they had been seeing, and for them to be turned away. But hopefully our country is going to make a quick turn and we're going to start doing the right thing.
Well, Jackie, let me just make a point about that as well. Just about every insurance carrier has a network of physicians, and
there's probably, correct me if I'm wrong, Todd, overall there are probably more providers out there who are accepting Medicare than there are in the United Healthcare network. So an employee now on our United Healthcare can't go to just anybody they want to go to. It has to be within that network. So whatever plan we have, there will be limitations. The old days of going to anybody you want to go to and having the insurance company pay for it are gone.
I'm aware of that, but I'm also aware that there are providers, there are many providers who don't take Medicare or choose not to take Medicare. Anyway, we have a long night.
Yeah.
We do, and thank you for this report. I just want to say I think, I'm going to go out on a limb and say I think I speak for the entire board in saying that as we continue to look at this issue that we recognize that as a board we have very high expectations from our town employees about the quality of service that is provided to this board and to the residents of the town of Carrboro and visitors of the town of Carrboro, and we recognize that one of the things that necessarily comes along with that is that our town employees can have very high expectations of us as an employer, and so I feel I certainly, and I'm sure our entire board is going to be looking at this issue very closely in trying to make a decision about how to proceed.
Let me just make one comment, if I may, in response to that, because this is something we've been talking about for a couple of years and looking at, 20-plus percent increases, and it's not, I think Todd will tell you, it's not a decision to even bring this to you all. It was taken lightly by me or our other staff. In the 32 years I've been in this business, this is the second time in my career that I have ever suggested to an elected body that we make any changes in employee benefits that might be perceived as something less. I've typically been in front of boards like this advocating for additional benefits. So I feel like my job as manager is to weigh the good of the employees with the fiduciary responsibility we have to the community. And that, as I know you all feel that same burden, that's why in looking at this over the last couple of years, our instructions to Todd was find something that would be as comparable as possible, and the first step would be the absolute minimum impact to try to stem the level of losses that we perceive. Because as I told the retiree group on Friday, my concern is it might not happen in my tenure here with the town of Carrboro, but if we're not able to do something, if something doesn't happen at the federal level, if we can't do something to reduce costs, we're going to be looking at either making significant reductions in benefits for all of our employees, current employees and retirees, or facing cost that for a small town will just become such a huge portion of our budget that it'll just be unaffordable. So I'm trying to take a very, very small step now to avoid coming back in a few years and asking you all to take a very large step. So I just wanted you to know that I didn't come with this lightly tonight.
We don't mean to shoot the messenger.
Yeah, and I think we speak for the whole board in saying we know that. We it's part of the reason we hired you. Thanks, Steve.
It's a national mess.
All right.
Thank you, Todd.
With that, thanks for this report. I think our next agenda item.
Move to a substitute report.
A second.
Yeah, we're actually asked to receive the report, so take that as a motion to receive the report. It's been seconded. All those in favor of receiving the report?
Aye.
Aye. Matter passes unanimously. There will come a time later this spring where there will be something more in the nature of a decision to be made about this matter.
Right. Our next step would be to share this information in a series of employee meetings, so at least employees have a direct understanding of what's on the table for you all to be looking at.
And then whether we're actually going to do this or not would be a decision we'd make as a part of our town budget for next year. Is that right?
That would be
okay.
My anticipation.
So no decision's been made at this point about how we're going to proceed. But
yeah,
we're
and we'll be hopefully within the next month and a half or so be in a position to share with you all the renewal cost for next year, which may have some bearing on the decision-making process.
I'm sorry, I should have brought this up a moment ago before we just voted, but
Could we get a I guess I'm still interested, notwithstanding the report, I'm still interested in the question of what it would cost for us to make it a possibility for our part-time employees to buy into the system, whether it's to buy into our United Healthcare coverage, or I don't know, is there some other alternative? But I think we have very few part-time permanent employees, and I think the few that we have are seriously interested in participating in our system. And I understand UHC's reservations, but I want to know how we could do it or what it might cost us to do that before I can really come to a conclusion myself that I'm willing to abandon the topic.
Todd, I assume what we could do as a part of the renewal is to get them the information about the numbers and ask them to give us a with and without quote. So that's what I need.
The challenge of that seems obviously, is the town going to contribute towards the cost? Because that would certainly become a parameter in their decision as well.
I think my notion was to allow the employee to pay to participate, and not for the town to contribute. So,
but absolutely, we can.
Okay. Yeah, we can do that.
All right. Thanks very much. Mr. Manager, sorry, item three.
We have comments on the concept plan for the Bowling Creek Greenway, and I apologize for the fact that this says no presentation. Kendall said maybe it can stand for new person, but she does have a brief presentation. As you all know, the town of Chapel Hill referred this Bowling Creek Greenway Phase 3 concept plan to you all for comment. Our staff has reviewed the plan and offers comments for the board's consideration, and there's a resolution in your packet providing comments for the board's adoption. So, Kendall. It's all yours.
In brief.
I always try to give you all a choice. You want the 7-second version or the second 7-second?
7-second.
Okay. I guess if you're serious about that, I'll just make two corrections. The first is I think I misunderstood the option number 4 that was described, not by the staff but of Chapel Hill, but as part of the general discussion between Chapel Hill staff and the board. Options 1 and 2 are shown north of Estes Drive, crossing under Estes Drive and going north. This is option 1 on the east side of the railroad tracks and option 2 on the other, and there's a continuation. Whoops. And then continuing further north, again, option 1, option 2. Option 4, which was discussed, talked about crossing a little bit further north up in this direction, crossing UNC land to UNC property up to Sewell School Road, and I think I incorrectly described that in your memo. So just wanted to clarify that. And then regarding the spur trail down to Baldwin Park, in your resolution and in the memo, it talks about stream restoration efforts. And I think the wording says including when the construction is done that it would include stream restoration. And in talking with staff further, I think it would be better worded because of timing issues. We don't know when stream restoration would be possible and when funding would be available. I think it would be better to word that in the resolution the following. The board supports a connection to the Greenway Spur Trail to Baldwin Park and recommends that in the town's future coordination with Chapel Hill and combined Greenway efforts, any design and construction in this vicinity strike the word include and substitute not preclude stream restoration efforts, period. So that's our recommendation and correction on that.
Can I ask for one? I'm sorry.
Yes.
On attachment A1, the proposed resolution here?
Yes.
Can you help
I didn't quite understand the way the resolution was worded about what you were saying about the connection, what was being recommended here as far as a connection from the vicinity of Bowen Creek to Sewell School Road.
Okay. I'll show you option five. This is the staff recommendation.
Yes, what is the staff recommendation?
Okay. Prepared a map for that. So here's where the trail starts here at Estes Drive. What we're saying, instead of the trail starting over on this side, starting it over on the left-hand side where the Owassa easement is already, there's a cleared flat area in this vicinity. Mm-hmm. And then following the creek and the sewer line, the entire route. So like this. And then crossing over in the Carolina North area, or actually we were talking about stubbing out to this point. Chapel Hill could pick it up right here across the Smith Middle School site, and then the town and both towns could construct bike lanes down Sewell School Road for more of a loop system, so it would be more of a loop like this instead of having Carborough's Greenway going in this direction and then the Chapel Hill Greenway kind of going this direction and so, not connecting.
So in other words, not calling for a, at least at this point, the trail, for there to be a trail really on either immediate side of the rail line.
Right.
At this point. But right. Instead just making that connection up in the Carolina North property or maybe even north of the Carolina North property.
Right. And just thinking about limited funds and, you know, efficiency of mileage and so forth, making it more of a loop trail.
Okay. All right. Is there a motion for the resolution?
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed? Matter passed unanimously. Thanks very much.
Thank you, sure. Kendall.
Kendall.
All right. This is good.
All right. Mr. Manager, item D4.
Okay. D4 is a discussion of a process to update the implementation of the Northern Study Area Plan and a request to set a public hearing on a development moratorium in the Northern Study Area. On February 6th, the Board of Aldermen decided to proceed with establishing a process to review / update the implementation of the facilitated small area plan for Carborough's Northern Study Area. A six-month moratorium on residential development was identified as a desired component of the review process. Resolutions defining the review process and setting a public hearing on a draft ordinance to establish a six-month moratorium are provided in your packet. And Trish McGuire, our planning administrator, has a presentation on the proposed process. Trish.
Thank you, Steve. Good evening, everyone. Just one more step. Pardon me. This item is coming back to you after initially being presented back in to the board in June of 2006 as a recommendation from several advisory boards. The planning board initiated it and submitted it to others for requests, comments and so forth, and that was presented in June of 2006. And on February 6th, you decided to move forward. I'm going to jump right in. As was noted, there are two components to this. To this information, and that is both a discussion of a review process and the review of consideration of a request to set a public hearing on a development moratorium. The plan review, of course, of the review of the Northern Study Area Plan implementation and the update of that implementation, if that's an outcome of that process, could occur without a development moratorium, but the moratorium, a moratorium, does provide an opportunity for some sort of time to consider the issues on the table and to not be pressured or concerned about the potential incompatibility of projects that would be submitted during that period of time creating an opportunity for the community to consider where the plan is now and how it might be modified in its implementation. The planning board's process, that is to say their initial process, process that was developed with Alderman Zaffron, James Carnahan, Planning Board Chair, and Alderman Coleman's input was considered by the board as well as that was considered by the Board of Aldermen as well as statutory provisions dealing with development moratoria and the joint planning agreement provisions dealing with that same issue were considered in preparing a process for you all to consider tonight. And the process that we've provided has two components to it. First of all, those activities that would occur prior to the enactment of the moratorium and those things that would occur during the moratorium itself. A development moratorium is a temporary suspension of land use regulations, and as such, it's enacted as a land use ordinance text amendment with the procedural requirements associated with that public hearing notice as we use for a text amendment. There has to be a public hearing. There is no public notice other than a published notice. There is not direct mailing and so forth required as part of that process. There are changes that came about that you all are familiar with in the 2005 statutory in the General Assembly in 2005 that we have considered in this process and in the development moratorium itself that makes it somewhat different from a moratoria that had been established by the board as recently as associated with the R2 zoning district in 2005. The joint planning provisions affect the topic on the table here tonight in that the Northern Study Area is includes the transition areas as defined under the joint planning agreement, and consequently the joint planning agreement does control, and because it has language dealing with development moratoria, it does control the some of the components of a development moratorium. That document includes a provision that limits the initial enactment of a development moratorium to 6 months, and then allows that a six-month extension could be permitted. The moratorium, as enacted within the town of Carrboro and within Chapel, if Chapel Hill were to consider them, the language is the same, is not effective until the ordinance establishing the moratorium has been adopted by the town, by the Board of Aldermen, following a public hearing, and then adopted by the Board of County Commissioners as well. The draft ordinance that we've provided for you specifies that there are a number of findings associated with the need for a moratorium, what it is the board hopes to accomplish during that period of time, and why the need is moratorium is being proposed. It specifies the applicability of the moratorium, what kinds of development would be affected, and also describes exceptions to the moratorium. There is an effective date and duration proposed. The effective date would be the beginning point is tentatively identified within the ordinance as April 10th. That's the earliest date at which, in discussions with Orange County staff, the commissioners could consider this ordinance subsequent to the Board of Aldermen holding a public hearing on March 27th. That would be assuming the board did adopt it that night as well. So this is a somewhat of a flexible schedule and outlined for you here. It would change depending on when you acted and then when the county commissioners were able to act. There is a schedule of work outlined in the development moratorium draft ordinance as well, with a number of tasks noted as expected to be completed during that period of time. The Northern Study Area, just to kind of remind everyone, is the area defined here or outlined here in the dark blue. This is the land use map from the facilitated small area plan for Carrboro's Northern Study Area. The plan itself was adopted by all three parties in 1999. The Board of Aldermen's action on it took place in June of 1998, and the County Commissioners was the third adoption date of February 1999. The Northern Study Area plan itself, though, does include portions of the town's jurisdiction. At the time, they were shown here within the red. These were the city limits at the time. And the remaining areas were portions of the extraterritorial jurisdiction. And then all of the area that's not included in the red boundary was all within the transition areas at that time. And the boundary has changed to expand the city limits significantly, to leave only a small piece of the extraterritorial jurisdiction here on this property, and then to leave the transition areas essentially up in this area with a few holes in the middle. There are nearly 4,000 acres of land included within the Northern Study Area, and there was a moratorium enacted on the entirety of that area once before between 1997 and 1998 when the Northern Study Area plan draft ordinance provisions were being prepared. In the before. There are 10 projects currently in review, 4 properties in the Northern Study Area as of Friday, February 16th, that were considered active as of the Zoning Division's, in relation to the Zoning Division's active projects report, and that's sort of the mechanism that we use for determining whether a project has, you know, has been accepted as part of the formal review process of the town. 2 applications have been received since then. Those 10 projects are listed in your staff report, the abstract for this item. 2 additional applications have been received for the Juan Buddhism Center and Claremont 2 Architecturally Integrated Subdivision, and they are now considered active projects. As currently drafted, the ordinance would make the moratorium applicable to any of the remaining 3 projects that are listed in these abstract, and those are the Tally Ho Architecturally Integrated Subdivision, Litchfield Architecturally Integrated Subdivision, and the Carolina Commons Project. It would make it applicable to those if permit applications for them were not received by the effective date of the ordinance, which, as I've mentioned, would be the date that the ordinance was finally adopted by the Board of County Commissioners.
And can you remind, the Tally Ho AIS, that's sometimes also known as the Cotton property, is
yes.
That right? So it's Carolina Commons is the UNC-owned property that's just yep. north of?
I have a map right here.
Okay, excellent.
That shows those 3 projects. This is okay. Tally Ho up here. And actually, it should include this spot in the middle because that's part of the same parcel.
It's both of those parcels there.
Yeah, and it's this piece here, the UNC piece, and then these tracks here, which are
Litchfield
the AIS. Litchfield Architecturally Integrated Subdivision.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to go now?
I have a question.
Okay, go right ahead.
Our recommendation is that you consider the materials in front of you and let us know how you would like us to proceed.
Alderman Brown.
Town Attorney Pro. Yes. If you could refresh my memory, there was 2 things in terms of sort of the concept plan, allowing people to present concept plans, and also is it my understanding that we set the geographical boundaries for what the moratorium would be? And we could accept or remove some pieces of property from the moratorium?
Yeah, taking the latter question first, the answer would
okay.
be yes.
Okay.
And the first question, I think we did amend the ordinance to provide with a concept plan, did we not? Where's my guess? I think our chief historian is right there, and he has a far better memory on all matters than I do. And he informs me reliably that we did, in fact, amend the ordinance to provide for the concept plan as a part of a review process, but it's not part of the formal permit issuing process.
Okay.
It's just
okay.
additional step that
okay.
sort of precedes the application.
And right. that would then meet the request of the university in regards to the concept plan for Carolina Commons that we received
right.
today.
The ordinance provisions itself, I mean, there's if you were to amend the ordinance so that it would not apply to, the moratorium would not apply to concept plan review, there's just one line in Section 2 that says, nor shall the town reviewer consider any concept plans for developments within this area. So if you chose to delete that, then it would simply not prohibit the submission of concept plan or consideration of concept plans.
We have one person who signed up to speak on this topic at least. So let's hear from him now, Mr. Post.
I left about 2
more. Okay.
Mr. Mayor, I wanted to pass out something. Just allow me a minute.
Thanks.
Mr. Mayor, thank you very much. My name is Phil Post. I'm an engineer and land surveyor and been doing land planning and land development design in Carrboro for just about 30 years. Sometime this year, it'll be my 30th year.
We design projects all over the town of Carrboro, but we're actively working on several projects in the northern transition area. In fact, two of them are highlighted in purple here. So I guess I could you may expect me to speak tonight and say, well, your ox is really being gored by this proposal, but I am rising tonight to speak against this moratorium, not specifically related to these projects, even though I would urge you and I can explain why these projects, for each reason that I'm involved in, shouldn't be held up, because they will never contribute to the ultimate goals of the moratorium. I understand, in at least speaking with James Carnahan, the ultimate goals of the moratorium would be to identify commercial development potential and also to increase residential density. And I would contend to you that the two purple tracks here, Litchfield and Tallyho, for various reasons, either because of their small size or their environmental constraints, will never be either high-density residential projects or commercial projects because of the way they're served by roads and constrained by some natural constraints. But I won't go into that argument, and that's not my purpose here tonight. I think a moratorium is wrong for Chapel Hill. I mean, for a...
Swoon, presumably.
I was thinking I was going to go first. It's wrong for Carrboro, and it's I am going to talk about Chapel Hill at the end of my presentation, because it's related to transit planning, and that was really one of my first points, was that that Carrboro is, in my view, it's detrimental because of the fact of what I call the pendulum effect. As you know, Carrboro, Chapel Hill, Southern Orange has grown at 2% per year for the last 25 years. That's the period of time that I've been doing business in this area. It's been a steady growth. It has not been like some of our neighboring communities like Cary and Durham, Raleigh particularly, where they've had vast spikes in development. So it's been, I think, good for our community to grow at a relatively very modest but steady pace. Now, a moratorium is going to halt development. It's projected to be 6 months. I would submit to you that it may very well be longer than that to accomplish what you want to do. And the pendulum effect will be to stop development. That may seem very good to some folks. But at the end of that, and it will end, and I know that you know that, there's going to be a rush towards development. And I don't think that the effect of halting and then starting with a big wave of new development is good. I think it's better to have steady, modest progress and not. So that's my main point. But the second thing is that you have a planning document that was in effect when the facilitated small area plan that Trish just showed you came into effect. It was the Task Force 2000 plan. I know you're all familiar with it. It's really been a wonderful guideline for me. I've never seen a document like this that's so short, so brief, so concise, and has led a community, because there's the points that were made here, and I know they were made dozens of years ago, are really your community has faithfully followed through on the main points here. But there's some points in this planning document that were in effect when your current small area plan was adopted. That is, points in this thing that cover the whole town that need to be changed as a community reaction and attitude toward development. If you're going to make some changes in the northern trenches, that would be the point that I'd submit. And what are they? Well, one has to do with density along transit corridors, and this is where I need to mention the name of Chapel Hill again, because as you know, the main corridor planning for our transit corridors is done by the mass transit planning folks in Chapel Hill. The year 2000 plan says the town should consider mass transit routes to locate new high-density development and locate new high-density development near such routes. So if you're going to – if the purpose of this thing was to identify – areas in the North Transition Area for a higher density, that it seems to me that you'd have to precede that by identifying these mass transit routes. And I may not be at the tip of that, but I know for the developments that we are proposing in the northern transition area, just let me describe to you the process that we have to follow. As we bring in one of these developments, we are asked to go to Chapel Hill and see if we can request mass transit. So we go in and say, hey, we're going to build 14 lots or 22 lots or 36 lots here. Is there a chance to serve it with mass transit? And they take our request and they put it over here in this stack. You know, it comes from Chapel Hill and Carrboro and everywhere else in South Orange that wants mass transit. So the current system of having developers make the request for mass transit, and I think is a little backward. If you want to have density here, then you have to, it has to be preceded by identifying and being really planned for mass transit. And the current system to identify density and then come back and identify the mass transit routes, I think would be sort of backwards. It's backwards from your own plan and backwards from the way the world really works. That would be my first point. The second thing is that the year 2000 plan says that, and it relates to identifying sites for commercial development here, the year 2000 plan said to increase the number of peripheral shopping centers, meaning peripheral shopping opportunities here, would seriously inhibit the development of downtown center and existing peripheral centers. In other words, your year 2000 plan says you shouldn't be considering more peripheral shopping centers because it would be to the detriment of your downtown and your existing centers. I think before you try and identify sites out here, the entire community should, because I think in the past when there's been efforts done by, for instance, the planning board to identify commercial sites here, they've basically been sort of facilitated away because it's in direct contravention of one of the steadiest plans that you have, which is to not identify new shopping center opportunities here. So I think your overall community plan needs to be changed before you take an isolated area and try and identify some commercial centers. And really, lastly, your year 2000 plan says the town should encourage the development of more single-family and less multifamily housing. The residential developments that we've designed, for instance, Tally Ho is RR. It's zoned for 1 unit per acre. It's going to be developed at around 1.5, if it ever gets to go forward, units per acre. Litchfield is zoned for half-acre lots. It will be, which would mean a little less than 2 units per acre. It would be, hopefully, if it were ever approved, be upwards of 3 units an acre. So these projects are being more densely designed than the underlying zoning, which I think is you're encouraging. But as I understand the proposal, it would be to increase the residential density from in the low numbers to maybe 8, 10, 12 units per acre. And to do that, I think even those who are proposing that level of density would agree that you'd have to use a multifamily housing, you'd have to use a vertical construction, and that's in direct contravention of this kind of a plan, which says that development of more single-family and less multifamily is the better balance. And I guess my main point is that rather than isolating on a small area of town and preventing development there, I think it would be better to take a wider view of the town, and not a moratorium, but a wider view from the standpoint of the correct mix of commercial versus existing commercial, the correct mix of multifamily versus single family, the correct mix of density along identified transportation corridors. But I didn't want to come here and just be negative about it, so I proposed two things that I thought would be sort of a positive at least suggestion to you. Number one would be there's a lot of smart people in this room. It's not your present speaker, but there's a lot of smart people in this room and in this town. And before you would adopt a moratorium, I would urge you to assemble some sort of a focus group or a group of stakeholders to come up with some ideas. Can we achieve the goals of increased residential density and more commercial without the pain that might come from a moratorium, and just see if through a quick meeting of a group of stakeholders, whether some good ideas could come forward. And to start that off, I just wanted to make some suggestions to you, because this is not a clever trick, but I took your zoning ordinance, and if you change 6 words and you delete 9 words and you add 17 words, I believe, it's just my idea, crazy idea, you could really jumpstart some of the development opportunities that I think the focus of this thing is. For instance, under village mixed use, the current acres limit is you have to have 50 acres. So one of my changes would be to reduce the threshold for village mixed use from 50 acres down to 2 acres. Now, it may be a wild suggestion, but it's just to get the conversation started. You know as well as yourself that you've had village mixed use over some 8 years, and there's been one proposal, so it's a piece of honey that's not attracting a lot of flies. But if we reduce the threshold, maybe some more integrated mixed use developments would come forward. Similarly, you've had your PUD regulations. That has an acreage threshold of 25 acres. I've suggested, again, changing the 25 to 2 acres. And under your PUD regulations, you're allowed up to 60 variations of PUD, and I don't think this PUD section of the ordinance has been used very often. It's a great tool, but it's the threshold is set too high, in my view. And lastly, it's your roadway design standards. I know I've talked to James Carnahan, and I know there's other folks besides James that are really interested in this subject, of the need for greater residential density, but the current roadway design standards are really inimical to that goal. And therefore, if you just simply identify and say, well, we'd like more dense residential development out here, I still don't think you're going to achieve it, because one of the reasons would be these roadway standards. These roadway standards require new subdivision roads to be built generally for 35-mile-an-hour design speeds, which means they're big enough and broad enough and smooth enough to travel at 35 miles an hour. And we know that that's inimical to more dense, intense urban living. And in fact, you allow what's called the DOT traditional roads in certain developments, but you don't allow them in new subdivisions here. So one of my suggestions would be to allow these traditional road design standards, which are allowed in village mixed use but are not allowed in regular subdivisions, to be adopted into regular subdivisions. These standards have design speeds of about 20 miles an hour in general, and they'd be much more compatible to dense urban, more urban residential. So if you just simply identify here on this map, we'd like more intensity, and you don't change your street design standards, I would submit to you, you're not going to get to the goal line that you want. So my main point is that this is a broader subject than this the land planning of the Northern Transition Area. It requires more changes than just identifying sites on this map, and that it should be postponed for a broader community discussion. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Phil. Mr. Zinn.
Good evening. My name is Omar Zinn, and I'm a builder, developer, and longtime Chapel Hill resident. And I was watching my TV last night, trying to tune in to you guys as much as possible. And last week, that is. And, you know, I thought the moratorium discussion was going to disappear, and then kind of came back up, and Joel seemed to be interested in it, and so here we are tonight. So I just wanted to discuss a few, not blaming you, Joel, just,
it's all right.
You know, just kind of.
That's why I get the big money.
There you go. So I just thought it was going to go one way, and it kind of turned around, and here we are. So there were a few reasons, a few ideas I wanted to discuss in terms of why I think a moratorium is unnecessary and unfair to people in my position and others who are landowners, developers, et cetera. Three primary reasons. I know that the planning board raised the idea of a moratorium recently. I think James was someone of the author. And I think their goals for the moratorium, as Phil said, were to see some increased commercial and to see some more dense residential development in the northern transition area. And I think that if you look at the parcels that are currently available for development and you just take a look at sewer lines in particular, you get an idea of what parcels are currently developable. And there aren't a whole lot. Development is spreading north. Sewer is kind of stopped there at Hogan's Farm. So the whole development process, as you guys know, takes quite a long time to ultimately apply for CUP. Before you can get the CUP, you have to go through the concept review process, which can take over a year and cost a lot of time and a lot of money. Joel was inquiring earlier about, you know, Dan was as well, as to whether or not people who were in the concept review process were actually in the door or not. So my brother and I, we just actually got our submission in for Claremont 2 across the road, but these three subdivisions here have been working on their projects for quite some time, and if, you know, the moratorium happens, they'll be kind of stuck with a lot on the table and really sitting ducks waiting to figure out what their next move is. So that's one of the reasons. The whole concept review process, and I urge you to, you know, if you ultimately do enact a moratorium, to allow those people who have spent time and money in the concept review process through the door, even though I don't currently have a project that's in that situation. If you look at the two large tracts that have kind of been identified by Trish as commercial properties, the Hogan parcel across from Lake Hogan's Farm, which 50-plus acres, which would be a VMU, you have the capacity to be a VMU subdivision, or the Brockwell parcel, which doesn't have sewer anywhere close to it. Those are kind of the two commercial, large commercial tracts that you know, Trish has bubbled out. She's identified several commercial tracts in the NTA, and those are the two largest. And I definitely see those being developed into VMUs or commercial properties one day. However, I don't think the population is really in the NTA right now to do large-scale commercial development. I also don't think that there's really enough population to do something small like a little Weaver Dairy Road, Bagels on the Hill. I think we're going to need to see more people living out there, more rooftops to serve those commercial areas. I think that it's a good idea to increase density. But I think if we begin this moratorium process, we're going to be stuck for at least a year, possibly more. And I think during the year that we maybe would have wasted talking about the opportunities and the possibilities, I think that now is a good time to start to talk about rezoning parcels. Let's begin the discussion. Let's not talk about it for a year and then talk about it some more and then maybe rezone these parcels or rezone those parcels. Let's make it fair to the people who are in the door. Let them take their developments through the process, and let's talk about where we want to see increased density and increased development. That's it.
Thanks so much. Is there anybody else who wanted to speak on this?
I have another question for the attorney. At what point can we remove properties from the moratorium? Would we have to do it tonight with the resolution, or could it be done at the public hearing?
Either time.
Okay. Dan.
Yeah, I have an issue with the schedule, which I had emailed you all about, that it was a problem, and that I have a suggestion about, which is that the schedule doesn't jive up with the process we talked about previously, and that that process between the two community meetings has a step called, described as committee conducts individual meetings to flesh out proposals for each of the key topic areas. And I'm thinking that that could take more than the 1 month allocated currently between step 7 and step 9. So my suggestion is that we modify the schedule so that step 7 occurs rather than on May 5th, on April 15th, and that step 9 rather than on June 2nd, on June 15th, to give a 2 month window for that aspect of it. And that would mean step 6 would need to be moved up a week or so. I don't have a suggestion of exact date then. And step 10 would start on June 16th. But I think that if we're following this idea that the first community forum is going to identify concerns, and that before the second community forum, the committee is going to spend some time really digging into those concerns, discussing them, raising the relevant issues, so that the second community forum can focus more on particulars, then we need time for a number of meetings in between the forum for the committee to potentially address those. And I don't think it's a problem in terms of the schedule otherwise to increase that aspect of it in either direction by a couple weeks to allow that time.
I'm not quite sure how how to go about this, but Phil made a recommendation about exploring the possibility of having, you know, a group formed, and that seems so parallel to what we're recommending, but I'm not sure how we can use that prior to actually setting a moratorium. In other words, I'd like to hear us discuss that some.
Jackie?
I came here tonight thinking that I was going to support moving the moratorium on to public hearing. I just, because I thought, okay, and then at the public hearing I'll hear all this stuff and I can decide then whether I support it or I don't support it. I'm not convinced enough to even move it to a public hearing that we need a moratorium, because I'm very impressed with Phil's suggestion. If what we're trying to do is to increase density and in order to get some commercial out there, then let's pull together the group of people who know how to do that. I don't think we need to call a moratorium in order to do that. I think we can pull a group together, have a like 2 to 3 month work time, and start coming up with some changes. I think a moratorium is, I think it's unfair. I don't really see it as being that productive.
Good question.
Should have voted while I was out sick.
But kind of respected.
Which I appreciate. Which I very much appreciate.
We knew we could vote you down later, so.
Yeah.
Mr. Counsel, can we just put a moratorium on those undeveloped parcels that there's not much land left. Right. And I'm concerned about this. These folks who are in the pipeline, so that we can have the discussion about rezoning. I think there's not much land left to, I don't want to stop everybody.
Can you clarify what you mean a little bit?
How can you stop? Is it a moratorium the only vehicle that we have to for those undeveloped parcels that are left
John,
for development?
John, do you mean parcels that are not currently being considered and do not currently? Do you mean parcels
that are not in the radar yet?
That are not at all on this.
Right.
So even others. Including. Like the 3 to 4, depending on how you look at it. So anything that's not on this list, including the ones with yes next to it, to have a moratorium on those parcels, is that what you mean?
Right.
I could support that.
Mr. Attorney, you can set the applicability of the moratorium as you would choose to. For example, you could set it and say it does not apply to anyone who submitted a concept plan. Or does apply, I think I would recommend that you do it that way rather than try to pick and choose individual
right.
tracks
mm-hmm.
within a generalized location. At some point, you would need to decide that it's going to apply to someone who is in some point in the process, and one would have to articulate, some. Clearly defined status. It couldn't be someone that's thinking about development. I mean, that's
right.
nothing we
right.
can point to. It would have to be they've submitted a concept plan application or they've submitted an application for a condition or special use permit or rezoning or whatever. You just establish the time frame. You could also say we establish the effective date of the moratorium later, giving people 3 months time to do whatever they need. You could leave some front time up. Depending upon what your goal is and what you're trying to achieve.
Joel?
I would support a moratorium. Sorry, loud enough anyway. I support the moratorium if you put the concept plan portion on it.
Mm-hmm.
But just let me say that some of what was argued, and I understand. I like your idea, Phil, and I'd like to look at it more. And I understand your position, Omar. But understand that they're going to put two schools out there. And I don't mean any harm, but people are going to say, schools? I want to live in the district. Well, I can't live in my office, so I have to live in a house. And that's going to be pushing some of the development. Middle school has about, 600 to 700 students?
Mm-hmm.
They're not living alone in an apartment.
We hope.
Yeah. And 585 elementary students.
Yeah.
And people are going to want to move in the area for the schools.
Oh,
and that's
going to
put more pressure on residential development in a certain way and in a certain fashion. And
that's
so I just have to say I'm still for a moratorium because in the overall plan of Carborough, we do need more commercial. And it doesn't necessarily have to look like shopping center commercial. It might be office institutional. And when we passed the original small area plan, there was not enough commercial in it. And I'm going to, of course, make that argument to the board whether we have a moratorium or not. But there certainly was not sufficient commercial in it, and it certainly was not diverse enough.
It's because the county took it out.
So, and there are different people on the commission, and I hope we can persuade them of our overarching goals, because Orange County is too expensive. And if you want to know how expensive we are, 619 homes sold for over $350,000 in 2005. Imagine what it is now. Now, I don't have a problem with people making money. I don't. But the health of the community requires some diversity. I'm done on this issue.
We got at least one good one left.
That's right.
And speaking of which, board members, how should we proceed? Somebody put a motion on the table here.
Let me ask this as a procedure question. We do need to move both Attachment A and Attachment B, if that's what we want to do. And I guess the question is, do you want to move attachment B first, then attachment A? Because I guess if we don't move attachment B, then we don't need really attachment A.
No, it's the other way around.
Really?
Right.
We need attachment A because that's
okay.
Our process for reviewing the plan that we're going to do whether or not we have a moratorium.
Okay.
So I would like to move attachment A
with, your
with the suggested modifications.
In the timeline
that.
That you outlined. Okay. So that's been moved and seconded that we basically undertake a process for modifying our land use plans for the northern area, and that does not include at this point a moratorium of any kind, but we'll probably vote on the moratorium question in just a moment. So,
would you restate it, please? I want to be sure we're voting on.
The attachment A.
It's in the packet.
So what it is it's laying out a timeline and a plan for doing the planning that we've been talking about in Northern Carrboro.
This includes this?
And without addressing the moratorium question right
that
now.
That applies to the moratorium. That's the next L.
Okay. So attachment A only with the suggested modifications from Alderman Coleman. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. The matter passes unanimously.
Excuse me, does someone, if I could just inquire, because it's going to affect the ordinance, does someone have those change dates? I mean, is there, so they're going to have to be transposed into the ordinance as well, and I just want to make sure
yes.
that
yes.
someone has those.
Yes.
Yeah, it's April 15th for Community Forum 1 and June 15th for Community Forum 2, but I did not look at a calendar, and we should say, or
corresponding changes for step
okay
or thereabouts, because you know if one of those falls on a Sunday, obviously okay. we're going to do it on the Saturday.
Could I raise one other point of clarification?
Yes.
When I drafted the ordinance, and this is an ambiguity that I've raised with the staff. There, as I read the materials, they could be read two ways in terms of what that process, which you just called for, is intended to do. One way of reading it, and there's a lot of language that suggests the purpose of that study effort is to take the existing small area plan and focus on ordinance changes that would perhaps better implement it. That's sort of alternative one. The other alternative, and there's language to suggest that, and much of the language suggests that's clearly what is intended, but there's also language and discussion from various folks and sources in the materials that would suggest the intent is to reconsider or consider changes in the small area plan, and those are not the same processes.
I see what you're saying.
And one is obviously much broader than the other, probably more time consuming. And I think I never got a clear understanding in my mind or from the documents, and I'm not sure that sometimes different board members have different thinking. But you understand there; those are mm-hmm. very different processes. Mm-hmm. Because I keep hearing different language about changing.
The question is, are we going to, is the idea to sort of alter the plan in some fundamental ways, or whether it's more of a refinement?
Is it to open up the plan and reconsider the plan, or is it to consider zoning changes that are designed to better implement the change? So you're taking the plan as a given and working on ordinance changes as opposed to reconsideration of the plan.
That's an important question.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. I want to float a suggested change to, I guess, item D on that and see if this kind of gets us around Mike's concern, which is to say that boards, individuals, and citizens have expressed doubts as to whether the goals and objectives of the town of Carrboro are being achieved through the Northern Study Area Plan and whether they can be achieved without modifications to that plan, to the land use ordinance, and to the zoning map.
So in other words, where are you reading? Where are you writing?
Attachment F1, number D, which is kind of where that
language
is.
I don't know how I missed that. Sorry.
It looks like this. It is the middle of the page.
Okay.
I think you're picking up on what I looked at. The majority of the language indicated to me that you were taking it's alternative two there, which was taking the Northern Study Area Plan as a given and looking at changes to implement it better. And that's the way this language reads.
So, Mike, what I'm suggesting is that if we said, instead of the goals and objectives of the Northern Study Area Plan, if we said the goals and objectives of the town, that kind of opens a broader window for us to kind of look, feel our way through the process as we go and consider issues that might come up without delimiting ourselves too much in advance.
Yeah, I think that's a good change if that's the way you wish to go. My main concern is that this board is clear on what it thinks is going to happen, because it was very clear to me that the staff and my discussion with them was not entirely clear, and I certainly wasn't clear. Well, I made a choice in drafting it. I opted for the approach that said, well, as I've just explained, Dan's language would change that, which is fine. I mean, it's up to you, whatever you want to do, but it just seemed to me that there was not clarity, and it was... There's some language, as I said, that clearly reflects implementing the plan, mm-hmm. and other language that says re-examining the plan, and they're not the same.
Well,
so whatever you want to do is fine, and we can change that language would work if the intent is to say we want to reconsider the plan, or at least open up the plan for reconsideration and then figure out how to implement it.
Well,
but be advised that that is obviously a much broader task.
I was thinking of more limiting and refinement. I think... And I can't speak for the rest of the board, so I only speak for myself. My understanding was refinement and not sort of is the Northern Transition Area Plan, do we want to scrap it? Mm-hmm. I've never thought of it that way. And if that's going to be the discussion, then I think we should wait till the absent member is here.
My interpretation was focused more on the zoning and looking at the existing plan and how zoning can be reviewed to implement the plan in a broader fashion.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, I agree, Joel, that, I mean, I absolutely think we ought to be refining the plan, but in doing that refinement, it strikes me as possible that we may come across something that is articulated as a goal in the Northern Study Area Plan that is not really what we want, and that we might want to leave the door open to be able to consider that. I'm not saying we go in with a focus on the whole plan. I absolutely agree we shouldn't do that. But I just would like to frame the moratorium, not, you know, the process, you know, that we just laid out is different. It has its own goals articulated mm-hmm. there. But that the moratorium itself, because that has a stronger kind of force of regulatory force, as I understand it, that should allow us a little wiggle room if we might need it.
I don't think that there has to be an absolutely clear, it's not absolutely one or the other. I think your language would allow sort of a little nibbling at the edges, but I just want it. I thought it would be useful to have it the board's clear direction that because when you appoint this group and let write a charge for that group, if the understanding is we're here to re-examine the basic assumptions of the plan, you've opened up a much wider thing than maybe you think you have.
Well, and
that was all.
If I can just for a second, my feeling is that we probably don't need to change any of the language here from what's been suggested. But let me say one of for whatever it's worth, personally, one of my goals in this process will be to hear from the folks who live out there. I think all of us want to hear from the folks who live in the northern in this study area about what their expectations and desires are for the town of Carrboro. So, I don't think we should go into it assuming that there are going to be major wholesale changes in the northern study area plan. But on the other hand, if part of the goal is to hear what folks are thinking, then obviously we'll have to approach it with open minds at a certain level in order to do that.
I'm not opposed to that. I think my concern is that we also can't look at it. We have to look at long-term stuff. Because what it looks like now, it's not what it's going to look like 50 years when we've crossed home plate. And to the extent that we can provide some sort of plan that makes it sustainable for the community after we have gone, you know, I think that's the central goal. Because it's not, we're not going to wake up in 5 years and that's all going to be developed. We're not going to wake up in 10 years and it's all going to be developed. But if we don't plan and have that refinement, then we get more of a hodgepodge that I think there is, at least I think, a consensus on the board is not what we want.
Right. Just consensus for refinement. Right?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if it's consensus, but yeah.
If I can digress for a moment, I'm informed by the clerk that April 14th is a Saturday and June 16th is a Saturday. So okay. I'd like to move that we amend the previous resolution
and
to indicate those dates to be those Saturdays, the 14th and 16th.
All right. That amendment's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passed unanimously. Okay. So those dates are now April 14th and
June 16th.
June 16th.
And one other item in terms of this ordinance is that the attorney had suggested that if on page 2 we remove the phrase, nor shall the town review or consider any concept plans, if we remove that,
right,
that would be responsive to the university's request and allow them to submit
and
a concept plan. Right. So that we might want to consider striking that deadline, this one.
Okay.
Okay.
Was that a motion?
Yes, I'll move attachment F as stated with striking that one line that I just indicated.
But I thought we had to do correction. B first for the public hearing. See, F, I thought, is the public
B
hearing. So B.
B is it. We need B.
You're right.
Right. And I guess
and actually F is what we'll consider at the public hearing.
Right.
Is that right?
F is
right.
What we'll consider at the public hearing.
So F will get a little bit of a redraft. So we're on B.
Right.
Okay. So we don't need a motion for F then at all.
Right.
Okay, correct. So what is your motion?
I move item B.
Can I ask just one question before we vote on item B? Do we need to change any part of item B to include the concept plan, what we discussed, or will that go on attachment F1 when we come to that at the public hearing if we decide to vote for it?
The change you just made to the ordinance would deal with the concept plan issue.
Okay. Okay. But we don't have to pass that one. We're just doing B. Attachment B.
Attachment D.
Which is the resolution to vote.
Setting a public hearing.
Setting a public hearing.
That's not a public hearing. Doesn't.
Okay.
That would,
all right.
That the public hearing would then be set on the proposed ordinance as now changed to eliminate the language about concept plans, therefore allowing people to submit new concept plans.
Okay. Well, then I'll move attachment B.
Take on that.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded that we schedule a public hearing for attachment B. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
The matter passes 5-1.
That's a lot of work.
Oh, yeah.
Are we on
okay,
a break now?
We need just a little bit of a break.
Okay.
Because it's been, if we say we're only going to take
we have,
4 minutes.
Okay. Well, let's take 4 minutes. I'll just point out that we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Okay, 3.
Five people at least who are signed up to speak on agenda item 5.
Do you want to jump in the ladies' room before I?
Yeah, but then that too is.
We're in the in that particular time we're in the exception. Now, if you start lobbying them about self-help,
that'd be a different story.
That'd be a different story. Okay.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to our February 20th, 2007 Carborough Board of Aldermen meeting. We are on agenda item D5, discussion of solid waste transfer station. We'll have a staff report, and then I have six or seven people signed up to speak on this matter. So, and it is late.
Actually, Mr. Mayor, we do not have a staff report.
There is not a staff report.
If there's something specific you'd like from us, we're happy to try to provide it. But since this is really the county's issue.
Okay. Well, then let me just give the following context, which is that at their meeting last week, the Board of County Commissioners asked for other area local governments to weigh in on the topic of what we think of the notion of a solid waste transfer station and where the county commissioners or how the county commissioners should go about locating such a transfer station, if that's the route to go. And so we have scheduled this time to have a discussion on this matter. Board members, if I may suggest, let's just proceed with hearing from those who've signed.
If I can make one point, though, I think it's worth noting that the commissioners are asking us a very specific question, which is, does the town of Carborough wish the county to consider the Highway 70 East site based on the information we have thus far?
Right.
So, I mean, obviously that raises all the other questions by implication.
Right. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Very good.
Before we get started with hearing from the members of the public who have signed up, I'd like to remind myself, mainly myself, to wait until all the members of the public have spoken before making comments. So if I violate that, people on either side may kick me, and people further down may throw
give me
things
the hammer
at me.
For
we'll
us to
do
okay,
nice
do that. Okay.
Yeah. All right.
And we'll take your diet coke.
And if anybody else wants to follow through with that suggestion as well, they're welcome.
Okay.
I'm
all right.
Try.
So duly noted. The first person who signed up to speak is Mr. Robert Campbell. Reverend Mr. Robert Campbell.
What kind I want?
Thank you for the opportunity. First thing I want to address is that the last three meetings that me and my neighbors have gone through, the transfer station item is always on the very end. The question is, how important is a transfer station for Orange County that the neighbors will come out to speak for it or against it, but they had to wait till the last part of the night to even discuss it. And saying that, let me move on. The issue with the transfer station is in your hand, not Orange County, because they put the ball in your court to make a decision about which site. Whether you choose Site 70 or you choose site on Eubanks Road, concessions need to be made, and they need to be made now. Carborough have annexed part of Rogers Road. Our concern is about the speed limit, still at 40 miles an hour. But no one is paying attention. We have waste trucks, brown trucks, cars, exceeding the speed limit. Some are going as fast as 60 miles an hour, running up behind school buses and passing school buses, passing cars on their way through. They use that as a thoroughfare to get around the congestion from the Martin Luther King Boulevard and 85. We request that Carborough enact the police department not to come to sit out there at the church, not to come sit in somebody's parking lot, but to observe up and down the Roger Road Eubanks area that is in the Carborough zone. And if they need assistance, use the Sheriff's Department and the Highway Patrol. This before fatalities end up out there on that road. If we cannot control the traffic now, what is going to happen if we put a transfer station out there? It'll be out of hand. Still have problem with debris flying off of uncovered trucks, debris flying out of the back end and the top of the trash trucks. There need to be some consistent plan of someone, even if it's the Carver employee, to come out there and help pick up trash. I know Orange County already has it, but it is very sparingly, maybe 3 times a month, maybe 4. But there are so much trash that it looked like somebody just come out there overnight and just throw the trash alongside the road. But it's actually coming out of some of the vehicles that haul the trash out there. Carver vehicles be on that road because they furnish that service. But there are other trucks from other municipalities that use that road as a cut-through to Eubanks Road, where we were told a long time ago in another discussion that this would not happen. We suggested to Orange County put big, bold letters on the trucks so the trucks can be identified to let us know what municipality is responsible for the violation, and then they handle it. The other thing is that, long time ago, getting into another nest, we were promised sewage and water. So the idea comes up again with the transfer station about sewage lines. Now, if a transfer station do not go on Eubanks Road, will this go away like the promise about the sewage and water when they want to put a landfill on Site 17? When that was pulled out, so were the funds, and people are yet to be hooked up to the water line because they set the standards according to HUD's regulation and not the economics of the assisted neighborhood. So our desire is that instead of pulling stats from other areas, somebody do an impact study and an economic study on the existing residents in the Rogers Road area, because we have elderly people out there who are retired. We have people in my age bracket. I'm not as young as I look, but I'm still working. So the economics is not as much as some people will perceive. I have a neighbor that had worked for Owasla in the town of Chapel Hill for many years. And him and his wife retired. Could not hook up to the water system, even though it ran right by his door, because he made $50 too much. Come on, people. Now, we got to a point where economics is more than the substance of the people who help generate and help beautify Chapel Hill, Carver, the Orange County area. We must put emphasis on the standards of people's lives and not so much of economics, how much it's going to cost if we go to Highway 70 with a dump truck. What about the people that lives in the neighborhood that is being impacted by what is being operated on out there on Eubanks Road now? The other thing is, we're talking about putting schools in this area. If we cannot control the traffic, someone is going to be calling a parent saying their child had been hit by a big truck, or the bus had been rear-ended by a big truck. Not only that, there are developments that's taking place out there that the neighborhood is not aware of that is going to take place. Now, when they begin to discuss about the animal shelter being put out there on part of Eubanks Road. The Roger Road neighborhood wasn't aware of that. So we're asking that, not only Carrboro, but since we are speaking to Carrboro tonight, the ones who have signed up to speak, is there some way that we can be put on a mailing list to be informed about the meetings? Because we don't get the chance to grab that Sunday paper and look in that front page and see that there's going to be a meeting. But if we get an opportunity to come forth and voice our opinion about what is going on in our neighborhood and what is being done to our neighborhood, then we'll be abreast of what is going to happen to our neighborhood and how it's going to impact us in the change. So we just ask for your assistance. But the question I want to ask you now, a deal or no deal? Which way are you going to go on the transfer station? And whatever your decision is, if you come back to Eubanks Road, is there any concession in your purse? We need help out there on Rogers Road. We need homes repaired for the elderly. We need handicap ramps for the elderly. We need sidewalks for the elderly. I have my dear friend, Mother Stroud. She go walking every day, and the trucks zoom by her, almost blow her down. They go by her so fast. These are the type of safety vices that we need. Where is the observant eye or our safety from the police department? Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, Reverend Kimmel. Tracy Kuhlman.
My name is Tracy Kuhlman. Can you hear me? And I live in Fox Meadow on Tally Ho Trail, which is just off of Rogers, as you know. You've all heard about the promise that Howard Lee made to the Rogers and Eubanks Roads residents in 1972 that the landfill would be closed after 10 years and turned into a community park. What I'd like to make sure is that everyone here understands what the siting of the waste transfer station on Eubanks would mean to the community. Aside from the noise and the litter, one of the biggest issues is traffic. The Waste Management Department likes to minimize the traffic effect by talking about relative numbers. It's only a dozen or so trucks. And sure, a dozen trucks doesn't seem like much. But what we're really talking about is 12 to 15 18-wheelers, each of which holds 6 to 10 garbage trucks worth of trash. So the math comes out to an average of 225 one-way trips by semis and garbage trucks combined along Eubanks Road, or one truck every 2 minutes. This heavy truck traffic will be combined with the traffic from the New Chapel Hill Town Operations Center, future developments along Eubanks, the buses, as previously mentioned, from the new elementary and middle schools, and the traffic from developments like Lake Hogan Farms going from their development to I-40. In addition, once the sewer is laid to the schools, that area of Eubanks will be ripe for development. These calculations also don't take into account the future waste needs of our county's growing population. Eubanks Road is the main route from the Rogers Road area and many of the developments along Homestead, including Lake Hogan Farms and Winmore, to I-40 and local shopping like grocery stores. For those of you who don't drive it regularly, it is a narrow two-lane road, and there are no plans to widen it when the waste transfer station is built. It's the absolute numbers that matter here, not the relative numbers. Because if the waste transfer station is put somewhere else, the hundreds of heavy trucks associated with household waste will no longer be part of the picture. There will still be construction and demolition-related traffic, but the vast majority of landfill traffic is household waste-related. I put this quote up from the September minutes of the Solid Waste Advisory Board meeting because it represents to me what is wrong with the process that has been used to make this decision.
The Solid Waste Department was never directed to look for alternate sites for this transfer station, and no formal criteria were used to choose a site. The alternate site proposed on Highway 70 came up only because a county commissioner happened to mention it, long after the Solid Waste Advisory Board recommended the use of the Eubanks Road location. They made that recommendation without a clear selection process that took into account the important factors of social responsibility and environment combined with economics. The Waste Management Department might tell you that a search has already been conducted when the county unsuccessfully looked for a place to locate a new landfill. But landfills and waste transfer stations, as they've told us, are really different animals. A waste transfer station requires only 10 acres, but a landfill requires much more. Waste disposal is a utility that the entire county should pay for, not just the residents of Eubanks and Rogers Roads. And they've shouldered the burden of our county's garbage for long enough. I urge you to tell the commissioners no to the proposed site on Eubanks. At the very least, we need a formal search for other sites and completion of a DOT assessment and environmental impact study before you agree to anything. We have a brief window of opportunity to allow old wounds to heal and to make this area something better than it is. So I hope we can take advantage of it while we have it. Thanks.
Thank you. Jeffrey Kingan.
Now I'm going to formally present some of our petitions. 207, it was 206 when we got here tonight, to Sarah. And we have a couple other sheets out. There's room for 20 signatures per petition sheet. And so we would have, when they're filled, 247. Our goal has been to be 500 petitions. And these, I covered the Rogers Road area plus some Tallyho Trail, and Tracy, who just spoke, has covered some, and we have Sharon Cook here tonight, who's covered the Highlands area. And so we're spreading out. We haven't even worked Hogan Farms yet, and Jeannie has helped in getting petition signed. And Henrietta, what's Henrietta's last name? She got 19 signed. Massey. Henrietta Massey. She lives on Rogers Road and got those Rogers Road petitions. So I turn these into you. These are copies. Now I'm just going to read this thing here that I've got. Now, it takes a little less than 4 minutes. And first of all, it's my first Board of Aldermen meeting and not a town. What's that? Oh, that's my stuff. I'm an old pro with PowerPoint. You know, my son-in-law talks about it.
Okay. We use both old and new technology.
Thank you. Let me see. How am I going to do this? Maybe this is the best way. So this is not the town council meeting. This is the Board of Aldermen meeting. My name is Jeff Kingan, and I'm not really sure if I'm a Carborough resident or I have a Chapel Hill address. I think I'm a Carborough resident. I live on Tallyho Trail, just down the street from Tracy.
Welcome to Carborough.
Yeah, my property tax is doubled, so I think I'm in Carborough.
Yes.
All right. Locating the proposed waste transfer station has nothing to do with hauling costs. The difference between the Eubanks Road site and the Interstate 85 Highway 70 site could be about convenience and familiarity, or about the extra half hour of daily travel the solid waste staff of 44 full-time employees and other part-time employees would have to drive both workdays because 85-70 is 14 miles farther away, or 28 miles more for the round trip. The question is it the extra travel time? I think it's a factor. It's just my guess. This waste transfer station site has nothing to do with money in any way. The county budget is exploding every year. In the last 3 years, it's gone from $136 million to $150 million to a whopping $163 million. Yet the county's solid waste operation is totally self-supporting for only a measly, and I shouldn't say measly, a very responsible $7 million a year. That's not a big government operation. And every sign points to the probability that the county solid waste operation is very professionally and efficiently run. They've won several awards. They're good with their the recycling and different things like that. No, the solid waste staff's only problem is and has been their expansionist ambitions. I use the term empire building, but that's too rough. I'm brand new at this. This is my very first and last foray into politics. 10 or 12 years ago, the solid waste staff tried to double the landfill before the Duke and federal lawyers stopped them in their tracks. Even last week, a landfill employee at the Eubank site on the south side of the road told me it would be okay if my friend in Durham used our site. This employee did ask first if it was the Durham that's in, if it was the Durham that's in Orange County. No, he was informed. He winked and he said it'd be fine. I think I should pause there. I don't know how much Durham's coming in here. The extra hauling cost to Carrboro and the Carrboro town staff estimate. This is on the solid waste staff stuff on the web. It's an estimate of a minuscule $142,000, which is not even 1% of the town budget. This again has nothing to do with money, which is a bogus issue designed to distract us voters and taxpayers to keep us from realizing what's really going on. But just for the record, it would be nice. I didn't get very far with Chapel Hill, but the amount is so small, $142,000. We could have every dollar. What does this entail? I hope it's not additional staff and trucks like the town of Chapel Hill has been trying. You know, that's what they've been doing, and they're $400,000. That's not. You know, I think these dollars aren't that many. People with all of us voters with second grade math skills can figure them out. All right, call it government-sponsored racism because that's what this has been. The black people along Eubanks Road and in the Rogers Road community, and not by intention. It's sort of a neglect. I remember, what's his name? Julius Chambers, the highly respected Julius Chambers, number one in his law school class, right? I think one of the first few blacks ever admitted to law school. He was number one in his class, his graduating class, and a brilliant man. He's still over at the UNC Law School. And what he said was that today racism is unconscious. And he's a lawyer, you know. He does great cases in Charlotte and so forth. But I think it is. I think it's unconscious today. I don't think it's conscious. The black people along Eubanks Road and in the Rogers Road community were promised 35 years ago that this landfill would have a limited lifespan. And now they're trying to put in a waste transfer station that would be permanent in those neighborhoods. In addition, over 500 new homes are going up right now, and over 600 existing homes are already there, having been built in just the last few years. And many of those residents must drive on tiny Eubanks Road because it's the fastest way to get on Interstate 40. I've done all the thing. It took about an hour and a half. I tried the New Hope. What's that road? The 40. New Hope Church Road. Tried Old 40. Old 86.
Right.
Tried New 86. You save all kinds of time. Not only the mileage when you get out there on 40. You save many, many minutes by going across Eubanks Road when you come out of gigantic Hogan Farms where they have a turn lane where you can just sit right on and cut right across Eubanks. There's no comparison to any other way to get there. So along before it could go to Durham or the Harris Teeter, in some cases to even get to the university campus and other Chapel Hill locations. They must all travel along Eubanks Road, which is only 2 miles long from one end of it to the other, and bumper to bumper during rush hour. Now finally, my last paragraph, Tracy already did this, but I like the momentum of it. You know, I like the pacing. I'll be done. Finally, picture this. Next year, the first of two brand new schools on confined Eubanks Road will be completed, an elementary school and then a middle school. Parents in cars and vans will be dropping off their children and picking them up, and school buses will have to be going in and out. So this tight little two-mile road will have school buses. And by the way, it flakes off. The road flakes off. The road, you know, if the garbage truck's coming the other way, a county commissioner told me that county commissioner is terrified to be out there on that road. Well, she said she. The county commissioner. The county commissioner. Well, there's two.
I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
There's two county commissioners. Anyway, that county commissioner is scared, is what the county commissioner said. So this tiny little two-mile road will have school buses and kids walking along the side of the road, plus all the Chapel Hill Public Works and transportation trucks, because they too now have to use Eubanks Road, plus all the city buses where their routes have to start and finish, plus the cars trying to get to Martin Luther King Jr. Drive, plus the speeding, sometimes reckless garbage trucks, plus all those UPS trucks hurrying to get to and from their huge Eubanks Road plant, plus the dump trucks, plus all those gigantic, loud, downshifting, pollution-spewing 18-wheelers going to and from the transfer station. Don't forget all these school buses, all on Eubanks Road, which in 20 years will be smack dab in the middle of Chapel Hill. In comparison, the Interstate 85 Highway 70 site doesn't go through any neighborhoods at all. You get right off there and you get right back on. You're not going down any streets. Right on is 19 acres. I think the 19 acres, I think that amount of land is needed for expansion down the road. I've talked to the owner. He's a wonderful fellow. And, of course, he's eager to sell. The $3.8 million is just the asking price. Okay. We must put the transfer station at the intersection of 85-70. Underground storm drainage is already in place. The site is already leveled and graded, and other important benefits are already provided, like a 50,000-gallon refueling station right there. Thank you for your time.
All right.
Good first speech.
Yeah.
Good first speech.
Done.
Thank you.
You can try and work it down to 3 minutes next time. That'd be great. But but it was entertaining for sure. David Richter.
My name is Dave Richter. I am a Carrboro resident, living in the Highlands for 17 years. I've been retired 3 years, and when I retired, I thought I was done with meetings and presentations and talking to folks who needed to be convinced of something, or one thing or another. Unfortunately, this one has got me out of my seat and over here. I've been told you were supposed to be factual and not emotional. For personal reasons, I won't go into. This is emotional for me and what's going on here. I think it's a travesty that Eubanks Road is being considered as the site for the transfer station. The Rogers Road community has put up with garbage in their backyards and all the resulting impacts, negative impacts to their quality of life for over three decades, and they're going to be asked to do more. This is a moral and ethical question, not just a facts and economics. And you've seen my emails. I'm sure you have, right? My email to all of you asking you to stand up and be counted. The email back from Commissioner Carey, which upset me. And then I responded back to him. As I looked more and more into it because of the exchange of emails, I got angrier. This document is a sham. It is not a true study. It is not done honestly. And the reason it's not is there was no real study done on alternative sites. The fact that we're even considering Eubanks is wrong. And then to come out with this document is insulting. It's insulting to the community. It's insulting to me. And for them to ask you to consider your decision based on this document, I think is insulting to you. Right? What I'm afraid of is that that Eubanks Road is the path of least resistance. I wish people would get as excited about what is going on this decision as they did on the Weaver Street grassy area, or Weaver Street Market grassy area. I would like to see that much emotion applied to this, right, which has far greater impact to a community and negative impact to a community than anything that happens on the grassy area in front of Weaver Street Market. Right? However, what I fear is, because it's a path of least resistance, there is no political consequences that result from putting this site, this transfer station on Eubanks Road. And therefore, it's just the easy thing to do. I urge you to look at the Solid Waste Advisory Board minutes and see what's going on here. The decision is being purposely funneled to choose Eubanks Road. I ask you to reject this. I ask you not just to reject this report, but to tell the Orange County Board of Commissioners to take Eubanks Road off the table. Right? Let them know also that this process is truly unacceptable, unprofessional, and not ethically correct. I thank you.
Thank you, David. Gene Straub.
Come up here this time and be repetitive, but I just want to say a few things. I've lived at Rogers Road for ever since 1989, and we've had to deal with buzzards. We've had to deal with the possums coming up in the yard, and you know these things can carry rabies. There are a lot of children out there. I have grandchildren out there, and I have children out there. I have family out there, a lot of elderly people, a lot of retired people, as it's been said, and we've had to deal with it all. They promised us water. We had a lot of promises that were not upheld. They reneged on the promises. We were told that things that were promised a long time ago, they couldn't abide by it because they had nothing in writing. And that was, to me, it was bad to hear something like that, because to me you should be able to stand by your word. You should be able to trust what the people in authority are saying. We were told that we would get water. When the water came through, well, the hookup is out there, but some of us had to pay. Some of us still don't have our water hooked up to our houses. And then with the landfill up there, and with all the things creeping around, and we don't know what's going through the ground, we're still having to deal with that well water. Even if you don't drink it, most of us have to buy bottled water that don't have the hookup. If you don't drink it, you have to bathe in it. And I know people say that the odor is horrible. You wake up to this horrible odor. You go to bed to this horrible odor. And they say, well, you're not coming in contact with whatever is contaminating, or maybe the odor is not going to bother. But I do know that odor can be as contaminated as touching things, as eating things at times, just according to what it is. We have no idea what's going in that landfill. There's no way to know. People just dump, and we don't know what goes into people's garbage. Even though they say it's house waste and stuff like that, you have no idea what goes into that garbage. And now they promise us that that the landfill, when the lifespan of the landfill was over, that would be it. Now they're talking about putting a waste station out there. Even a waste station is still trash, it's still garbage, it's still contamination. And we, with children out there walking the streets, having to go catch the bus, elderly people, all of us, we walk that road, we have no sidewalks, it's no place to walk. When we're walking, when a car is coming, you have to pay attention to all the cars. When they're coming, you have to stop, wash the car, and step off the highway. The people will not stop for you. They won't. They will not stop for you. And now to consider putting a waste transfer station out there, and to say that there will be 15 transfer trucks coming in two or three times a day, I don't see it. We love our children. We're human beings. And I think we all should get the same treatment. And the sewage, we don't even have sewage out there. And eventually, see what's going to happen. They're building up. They're building up the neighborhood. It's growing fast. And what they're going to do is they're going to, and this is how it works. And I do know that. What they'll do, they'll build it up. They'll leave the people that are, the people that have been out there so long without sewage and without water. And then they'll come around with saying, you're going to have to bring things up to standards. And the people are not going to have the finance to be able to do it. And seeing then they'll probably condemn their houses. But we're trying to prepare a place for our children and our grandchildren. We don't want to have to live there all this time,
and then have to turn around and move. And we're not getting any younger. So we would like for you all to consider other areas and not put it back on at Rogers Road, because we've had to deal with it, and we've had a lot of promises that were not upheld. And we would just appreciate very much if you just, you wake up in the morning, you hear all these noises. You hear trucks beeping very early. Trucks beeping. You hear motors running over at the landfill. And I would just wanted you all to just take that into consideration and think about it. Give us some thought as to that. And if you, if by chance there's funds, we would like to have help with getting sewage, because even though they're talking about putting the habitat houses out there and things like that, they're not saying a thing about helping us with the sewage. So it's like we are being overlooked, and it's just a small area that they're overlooking. They're building up all around the people that were originally, that have been there for a long time, but they're not saying anything about helping the people that have been there for all these years. So I would just appreciate you all considering that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Gene. Sharon Cook.
Good evening again. I've already emailed you some information, so I'm going to try not to repeat that, and also many of the things that people have said here tonight, but there's a few other things to consider. And, of course, our first and most important priority is our treatment of the people who have lived there for many, many years, and those families, and that's our first priority. There are some other considerations, too. Just behind where this waste transfer station is proposed is where the county has purchased the Blackwood Farm, and they're going to be restoring that. They're going to be using the buildings that are already there and have it kind of be a place where children and families can come and see how farms in Orange County worked back then, and that's also another part of that Blackwood property is going to be the county soccer fields. So what I find totally offensive, you know, those of you, some of you who have children, if you look in the some of the attachment E5, and it talks about rodents and vermin control, it says how will, one of the community concerns was how will rodents be controlled? Most rodents observed at the landfill actually enter on the collection vehicles that empty dumpsters that contain them among the waste. A solid waste management department contacts pest control to treat it. I got to ask you, especially those of you with children, how would you feel about knowing that garbage that has rodents in it is being dumped just a few blocks away from either where your kids are playing soccer or where your children live? I can't find anything more offensive than that. Another thing is, has their study been conducted? Of mixing so many garbage trucks, 18-wheelers, with our local residential. People have mentioned how Eubanks Roads, we have traffic problems here in town, and Eubanks Road is a major artery. It's what we use to get off of Homestead to relieve some of the traffic. It's, like I said, the quickest way to I-40, and we're mixing this traffic in with these 18-wheelers and these garbage trucks, and that's simply not fair. We have so many new developments going on here in Chapel Hill and Carrboro, and these nice, clean, pristine developments, they look great, but where is the trash up ending up? It's ending up in our oldest, longest-standing minority neighborhood, and I hope you find that as offensive as I find. Process does matter. When you review the Solid Waste Advisory Board minutes, you can see that even though basically a decision was made about this back in February, the meeting to talk to the community and get their input didn't even happen until January. And process matters. You know, this is an important issue that affects people's lives. The other thing we've talked about, we're looking for commercial sites. Absence that landfill, there's many things that we can be doing commercial-wise. You know, some people in the past have talked about a possible Costco. If we don't have that waste transfer site there, maybe then we could put some kind of Costco there or something, some other kind of commercial, some kind of office things. This is a problem we can use. We can use this opportunity to solve a lot of the problems we have with commercial rather than creating yet another problem for the people. Let's see. And I guess in ending, I just want to say that an 18-wheeler, I don't know if you've ever lived anywhere near 18-wheelers, but the sound I did, I lived in a neighborhood that was just a block or so away from 18-wheelers. When they're going in slow traffic, when they're downshifting to slow down and starting up again, not only is the noise incredible, but but also they have the smoke coming out from their diesel fuels, smoke spewing out. This is going to be going right behind the Northwoods neighborhood, right behind their backyards. So I know this has always seemed to be way out there, but as somebody else mentioned, it's not out there anymore. It's part of our community. It's part of our town. And I just hope that you consider, is this the kind of place that you would want in your neighborhood? And if it wouldn't, please don't put it in this neighborhood. Thank you.
And the last person signed up is Nancy Agnew.
Hi, I live in the Tally Ho Trail in Fox Meadow. They've all said it. I'm just here to be another person to say it. So I won't say it because it's 10:30, whatever it is. But say no. Go to 85 and 70. Don't put it on Eubanks. It's just sensible not to put it on Eubanks.
All right. Now you see, Jeffrey, that's what I was talking about. She really kept short there. But thank you all for your comments, and I'm just teasing about the length of comments. We appreciate this is it's an important issue for our whole community. Jackie.
I said as a reward for being so good while the public was speaking. This is that was a very painful 20 minutes. Over 10 years ago, I spent many months. I spent over a year going to many meetings and many meetings in the community. I don't toot my own horn much, but I stopped an expansion of the landfill out there because I said that I would not take it. DeCarver would not move forward with that. And it's one of the few things in my 17 years that I can point to and say I did something, you know. And then we sat there. And Mark was still a Chapel Hill Town Council member. He was probably still a student. And we sat through a whole summer of meetings to come up with this neighborhood agreement. And in the neighborhood agreement was the speed limit, was the water. I know the water's not perfect. I know that there are HUD limitations, but there is some water out there. It's not perfect. We still need to work on it, but the water lines did get laid out there. And we worked on good neighbor policies. And one of the good neighbor policies was whenever anything was happening that affected the neighborhood, that there was a list of people who would be contacted and told about that. And finally, there was no expansion of landfill. That after the current landfill was filled, there would be no expansion of landfill operations out in the Eubanks Road area. That was in that neighborhood agreement. That's what we all agreed to. Now people are telling me that they can't find that that's not in the agreement. But Mark and I sat there, and we listened to it. And you were there, Bob, and Annie M. I mean, we were all there, right? So this is like, you know, why did we all go through all of that all those years ago? The other thing I've been thinking all day is that we're now looking for people to be responsible. We're now looking whose responsibility is it to determine where the trash goes? Whose responsibility is it to get it away from us? And let's be real clear that if we were as progressive and responsible and ethical and as environmentally together as we say we are in this county, all of us, not just the boards, but all of us, we would not be shipping our trash out of county. Okay, just because we're going to get away from Eubanks Road, there's another Eubanks Road that we've never heard of somewhere, but we're going to send it to a transfer station. It's going to be transferred there. That Eubanks Road might be in Africa, actually. It might end up eventually being on a barge and sent somewhere. That happens. Coming up with a transfer station and then sending it out of county is not a final solution. Because someday that isn't going to work either. I'm not saying let's site the landfill in Orange County. I'm not saying that because I'm not politically brave enough to say that. If I were, then I would.
But I challenge everybody who was up there at the microphone and everybody that's here and everybody's at home, go home and look in your trash can. You know, that's your trash. You know, that's your stuff that you bought. That's all of us not paying attention to the packaging. That's all of us buying stuff that we don't need. You know, it's not the government's responsibility solely to determine where your trash goes. It's all of our responsibility not to make as much of trash. And we don't hear that talk anymore. You know, what's happened to the whole idea of reducing? You know, in the past 6 years, and gee, what happened 6 years ago? The whole environmental ethic has just evaporated. So, yeah, we're going to settle this problem, but we're just going to temporarily settle it. And until each of us starts controlling what goes into our trash can, it's your responsibility what goes in your trash can, right? So, that said, and I'm sorry I rambled, but I needed to say all of that. I think we should keep our own trash, not brave enough to cite it. I think we made an agreement, starting with Howard Lee in 1972, with that neighborhood, with the community meetings that I was part of, I don't know how long ago, 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. I think that environmentally it's not a good idea to take it up to 70, because that's more trash trips. I think that cost-wise it's not a good idea. It's only $142 for Carrboro, but you pay Orange County taxes as well as you pay Carrboro taxes. So, you know, financially and environmentally, it's not a good idea. Socially, however, it is a good idea. And so I would support moving it up to somebody else's problem. But go home and look in your trash can. I'm done.
Okay.
I just wanted to, for the moment, follow up on Jackie's point about the agreements that were made a decade ago. Because I looked at those, and as I was listening to Reverend Campbell's, like, you know, he's asking for things, all of which were already promised, and not promised by a single elected official on his own recognizance, but agreed to by the three governing bodies. You talked about covering trucks. That was agreed to. That ought to be done. You talked about litter pickup. That was agreed to. That ought to be done. As Jackie said, you talked about notification. That was agreed to. That ought to be going on. One thing that wasn't mentioned is bus service was promised. And that has not been done. And at the Transit Committee last week, I did ask the transportation director to give us a cost estimate for extending the HS bus route up Rogers Road. And he's going to do that. And, you know, I think, you know, and the reason I raise that is because I think, as Reverend Campbell indicated, these issues don't pertain directly to the transfer station, but they're things that we've been waiting on for a long time, and they come up as we think about it, and that now is the time to review those. And so I think that regardless of what happens with the transfer station, we need to review all those questions and the others that Reverend Campbell and others have raised about what our obligation are in those neighborhoods and make sure, as a separate discussion, that needs to happen and that we're doing the right thing there.
And I would like to just take that thought one step further, which is that I took the same stroll down Landfill Memory Lane on this issue of this committee that Jackie and I served and Reverend Campbell served on 10, 11 years ago. And there were a number of items. There were on the list of things that came out of our committee and that reported to the Assembly of Governments, there were 13 items, and eight or nine of those were adopted, ratified by the Assembly of Governments, like Dan was talking about. But there were a couple of others that never were dropped off the list by the Assembly of Governments. The political will was not there for whatever reason to make them a part of a compensation package. And that was the concept, was that it was a mm-hmm. package of things that we would do that were compensation for the burden of having the present landfill out on Eubanks Road. And I think that not only do we need to revisit, as Dan's suggesting, how we're doing on the items that were committed to by Chapel Hill, Carrboro, and Orange County at that meeting, but we need to also revisit the question of the other items that were on that list that we're not committed to. And I think it's particularly, I think all of us on the Board of Aldermen should note with some pride that it was our other two partner governments that voted down those other items. Mm-hmm. That the Carrboro Board of Aldermen stood together in endorsing virtually all, if not 100%, all of the recommended items. And I think one thing we need to do is, in connection with this, is revisit what our level of resolve is as a community here in Carrboro to the items, all of those different items, and that perhaps some new statement and new actions demonstrating what our commitment is to those issues need to be revisited. I'll point out that, for example, notably, somebody mentioned, one of the speakers mentioned this point, that there was a discussion at one time about water and sewer, but then what actually was installed in the ground was water lines. And that's maybe not even as accessible as it ought to be, but that we can look at that too. But the sewers were specifically one of the items that Chapel Hill and Orange County refused, and I say Chapel Hill over my objection, Chapel Hill and Orange County refused to go along with. I think that's the kind of issue that we need to revisit, not in connection with the question of whether we're going to build a transfer station on Eubanks Road, because those are issues that we need to revisit regardless of what the county does about the transfer station. They never were related to the next solid waste facility. They were related to the solid waste facility that has already been a burden for 35 years or however long in the community. It is getting late. I don't want to belabor that point. But let us put it on our agenda if the Board of Aldermen is in agreement.
Do you have that?
Yeah,
I've
got it. Okay. It exists. Copies of the minutes of that meeting exist. So we will revisit that on a future agenda.
Right.
And so turning to the more specifically to the transfer station question, I'll turn it over to you, Randy.
I just want to come behind you, Mark, and Dan and Jackie, and say that it's imperative that the neighborhood agreements and the good neighbor policies be fulfilled. It's absolutely unconscionable that it's gone on this long and has not been fulfilled. Those things need to be done. And then that includes compensation package and the concessions that were mentioned by several people tonight. And maybe that would close out old business appropriately, I would hope. Regarding the transfer station, at Monday night's New Horizons task force meeting, Linda Bowerman, who is a member of the New Horizons and a neighbor who attends the New Horizons, and Charlie Buckner were folks who were talking about the transfer station concerns of the neighborhoods out near Rogers Road and Eubanks. And one of the things that we got to talking about is, well, what is a transfer station? And the very same conversation came up when I attended Faith Tabernacle's meeting for the Rogers Road citizens several weeks ago. And one of the things that I think is really important is that it became abundantly clear that folks do not have all the information on what a transfer station is. They really don't know how it works. And first and foremost are the elected officials. And to me, talking about whether you site on Eubanks Road or you site it on Highway 70 or you site it up in, you know, northern Durham County or wherever you want to site it, you need to know what you're citing. You need to know what you're talking about. So at New Horizons, I said I'd look into this. I talked with Board of County Commissioner Valerie Fushi, and we're looking into the potential of first elected officials visiting a transfer station. Greensboro has a new, brand new transfer station online. It opened in December 2006. We don't know if that would be of interest to us in terms of whether or not it's the state of the art that Board of County Commissioner Moses Carey was talking about at the meeting, but we won't know until we go and we look at it. So Valerie is committed to make the trip, and I think that's the first step, and I think the next step, if it in any way meets the level of interest that that we have anywhere in the county, because I agree with Jackie that if we create the trash, doesn't matter. We all live downstream. That, you know, if it's satisfactory, if it is appropriate, that we consider making a trip and inviting citizens to attend on a fact-finding mission as well. So hopefully the county commissioner is going to bring this up this evening, and hopefully they will be supportive of it, and we'll be able to bring back more information to you and invite any citizens who want to participate with us to make a trip to a transfer station, and at least give us the information that will inform our decision-making moving forward.
I really want to thank the citizens who came forward with this information, because it is it's critical, and it reconfirms a lot of the fears I have. But I agree with the suggestions made that we need to get the facts and to make the best decisions we can. Something that strikes me is that over 70% of the garbage generated is generated in Southern Orange County, otherwise called as Chapel Hill. And it's a matter of fairness, it's a matter of ethics also. But also, you know, I know we are always trying not to raise taxes and doing the right thing, but I don't think we got all the facts, and we haven't seen all the opportunities we have there. You know, I guess Chapel Hill, I mean, Carrboro has always been the town on the other side of the tracks. So it's ironic that we still seem similar like that option even in these times. Why have we not considered you know, using the railroad track that we have? You know, maybe picking up the garbage in at UNC, which might, well, they have the coal factory there, would be, and using the rail. I don't know if somebody ever had looked at that, but that's one way to save money, and I think it makes sense to have it in Chapel Hill. We'll save a lot of money, and it would be better for everybody's environment. It would save more money overall for everybody's plant. I would really like folks to see a location close to the rail line, close to I-40 or I-85, where we can use that system not just to carry coal, but also to get rid of our garbage, and hopefully in the future also use it as a transit corridor. But I agree with you, Mr. Mayor. We need to revisit, and appreciate your leadership many, many years ago and on making, doing the right thing, and I think we still have a long way to go. And I want to get more information before we come to any conclusion on these issues.
Joel hasn't spoken.
She asked to go.
Actually, you want the last word?
The last.
Okay. I just wanted to follow up briefly on
seniority.
On Randy's point that I felt, since this came up, that you know, we're hearing from the county staff what a clean, state-of-the-art facility this is going to be, and then we're hearing the very understandable concerns of the neighbors that this is essentially a landfill by other means, in a sense, you know, is sort of a lot more like a landfill than like something else. And, you know, I feel like we do have a responsibility to understand exactly what kind of beast this is we're talking about. And the, as Randy pointed out, the Greensboro transfer station is brand new and is likely as close to using the kinds of technology and measures that we might expect. It might look different than ours. You know, we're told a transfer station can look any way you want, so ours might look like South Building or the Dean Dome. But anyway, just, you know, I think it's important to have an informed opinion about this for me to go and look at the transfer station, and I hope the commissioners feel that way since they're ultimately the decision makers on this, and they're going to put it somewhere in the county, and, you know, and they ought to understand what all the impacts are. And I certainly, you know, if they're asking us to help with that understanding, I'm more than willing to go on that field trip and dig into those questions.
Well, I decided to take the last word because I have the second most seniority on the board, and she went first, so I get to go last. Next week, maybe we'll trade.
We'll reverse.
I've been very vocal about my opposition to placing a transfer station out at the Eubanks Road site, and that has not changed, and I'm about to tell you all why. When you look at the Pantheon in North Carolina and the rest of the nation, when you look at solid waste facilities and public works facilities and every negative public use of a facility, you're more inclined to find it either in a working class, poor, white, black, or Latino neighborhood. Right. Now, I've lived in Orange County since 1992. I got on the AWASA board in 94, when there was this discussion about the landfill. When I got on the board in 1999, I voted against Carrboro transferring over to the county for the very self-same reasons they had not. We, as a municipal government, along with the other assembly of governments, had not kept our promises. And it continues till today. Now, I'm from Greensboro, North Carolina. And I can assure you, that transfer station is nowhere near Irving Park. And I'm willing to make a guess, it's not in any socioeconomic status area that requires somebody to be angry about it being in their neighborhood. I'm willing to bet if I'm wrong, y'all can tell me when you make the visit. In fact, I'll go with you because then we can go to Yum Yums and get a hot dog and some of the best ice cream right across the street from UNCG. So I'm very familiar with Guilford County and landfill issues, and solid waste, and sewers. So I'm not going to say anything else. I would be ready to vote to tell the county not to site it on Eubanks Road tonight. And I continue and have been for the last 7 years as a public servant in volunteer and elected position that it shouldn't be put there. And, you know, I've been outvoted before. And if you're going to put it out there, keep in mind the savings that's projected on putting it at Eubanks Road is $4.2 million. So I reduced it by 10% and said 3.7. Even if we spent $1.8 million on that neighborhood, that still wouldn't be fair. Would it be better than what's been done now? And I challenge any of you to know that my trash was picked up this morning and taken somewhere else. And I'd like to say, I drink milk out of a recyclable bottle. I compost, and we recycle a lot. We're a little junky, but we recycle a lot. So, you know, for me, I'm at the end of my limit to this discussion. I'm done.
Okay. I think what I take from this conversation is that the majority of the board is interested in visiting a facility that would be similar to what the county imagines being built, and that two-thirds of the board, at least anyway, is not prepared to make a decision about its opinion about Eubanks Road versus US 70 versus some other alternative until we've had an opportunity to have that kind of visit. So unless somebody feels that I'm not characterizing that the right way, I'll try to draft a letter that conveys that point to the county commissioners.
If you're going to get that information, I would like the address of where the Guilford County transfer station is.
All right.
And also, any minutes about how their process was decided and whether they had public hearings or not.
We know how they decided where to decide it.
And how they decided where to decide it.
Okay.
And open to, and make sure we notify the folks in the impacted area to join us, right?
Yeah, can we, let's...
Well, I want to make sure that elected officials get to make the trip first and they get the knowledge base.
Well,
if it doesn't satisfy, you know, the folks who make the first trip, surely that's not the place that... That's not what we have in mind for anywhere in Orange County.
Well, maybe we can, assuming that the county commissioners are going to be interested in this same concept, and I bet you that Chapel Hill elected officials would be interested as well. Perhaps there's a way that we can take advantage of our bus fleet or something like that,
trying
to arrange a bus to go on this tour. I'm quite serious. And, and perhaps, in fact, we can see whether we could arrange it that it would depart from over at the church on Rogers Road or something like that, so residents of the area would have access to come along with us as well. That concept would rely on a lot of cooperation from our from the other jurisdictions involved, and so we'll have to see where their sentiment is about this idea. But yeah,
I want to add one thing, and I'm thinking I probably speak for everyone on this, or correct me if I don't, but, you know, if we go on this field trip and we discover that that transfer station is attracting rats or rabid possums or generating a stench or leaching something into the water supply or any of the other kinds of problems that we've associated with the landfill, then I'm against it. I mean, that's a non-starter,
right?
You know, and not finding those doesn't mean the converse. It means, you know, the start of the next step in sort of our discussion with the commissioners.
That's right.
But I think, you know, there are the kinds of problems that have been associated with the landfill and that the neighbors are worried about. Yes, absolutely, those should not continue under any new scenario. And part of the reason for this site visit is to have some certainty or at least information onto as to what that facility really entails.
Okay.
Can we do that next week? Because it's 11 o'clock.
Yeah.
And we're supposed to do it January 15th, so we are much late anyway. So what's another week?
More time.
So I take that as a motion to adjourn.
It is.
Please.
Is that seconded?
Yes.
I think that's her point. I think she's saying
we
put that onto our agenda next week.
Okay.
Mr. Manager.
Several weeks ago, the mayor had mentioned the idea of changing the summer break schedule to extend that by 1 week, and I had mentioned to you all we'd like to go ahead and do that if you're interested,
so
that we can schedule, and what it would mean would be extending the break for the month of July in the first full 3 weeks in August, so that the first meeting in August would be August 28th.
The manager has a resolution there. Is there a motion for the manager's resolution?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded that we take off third week in August. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passed unanimously. It's been moved and seconded that we adjourn. All those in favor signify by saying aye. All those opposed, matter passed unanimously.